Bring it on, One-Eyed Willie.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 96 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm employed again.
Well done. Yay! No longer jobless Jones.
But I do worry that most of Pizza Hut might be jobless from the kind of profit loss from me not going every single day for a buffet lunch.
Shame.
So our thoughts are with those people at this time.
I like to think of the staff at like 1 o'clock standing there like, where is he? And then just shedding a solitary tear.
Whilst there's rain on the window pane.
They would have honestly taken a big hit. So you think about £8 a day for the buffet. That's how much it is. Times that by five, that's £40. That's £160 a month they're losing out. Just that branch.
It's literally your strip club, isn't it?
It is. So I think maybe we'll go back there when I quit my next job and we'll have a celebration meal.
Yeah, we'll give it 2 weeks. What have we got coming up on the show?
Well, we've got the big second film from Deadpool. And guess what it's called?
Go on. Ooh.
Deadpool 2.
That's imaginative, isn't it?
Didn't see that coming. Our rewatch this time around is going to be Michel Gondry's visual classic, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
And our topic this time around is our top three cult movies.
Oh, so much to choose from.
Indeed.
We've also got a brand new quiz, and it's so new, I don't even know the name. Ben's come up with it, so Ben, what is the name of this big, brand new quiz?
You're going to have to wait.
Oh. You bastard.
I'll tell you when we get there.
And guess what, boys? Movie Masturbate this time around is going to be Scarlett Johansson.
Calm down, lads. Yeah.
And of course, we'll have all the usual goodies that you're used to from your friendly neighbourhood podcast. We'll be giving away some great prizes and giving you our pop culture recommendations of the week.
I need to kind of lower the tone now.
Oh, there's
kind
a surprise.
Of need a, not in a rude way, just in a, you know, I want some violins in the background now.
Yeah.
So as you know, we've seen some news in the last couple of weeks that our good, good friends at Dark Bunny are no longer in trade, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a massive part of the success of this podcast. I've seen so many people on Twitter and Facebook say, I've just been and bought a t-shirt and found out about Skip to the End. It kind of worked both ways. It was a nice little partnership. And we're not going to be able to work with them anymore, I think, which is a huge loss.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Christ, I've lost count of how many competitions we've done. How many Dark Bunny t-shirts have we given away over the last 3 years or so?
About 867.
About.
Yes. Rounding it up.
But also, obviously, we saw the Stranger Things t-shirt they did for us and the Back to the Future one, which was absolutely sensational. The amount of sales was huge. I think it doubled what we did for the first run.
It did.
So I just want to say a massive thank you to Matt, to Alex and Tim. And this episode will be dedicated to the three of you. That's nice.
Yeah,
it is.
Well said. Let's get started. Our topic of conversation this time round are our top three cult movies. Those are the movies that didn't necessarily do so well at the box office, but have lived on in the public imagination, usually through home video releases, DVDs, etc. There's a broad brief here. There's a hell of a lot you could have gone for, so I'm really excited to see what you've got. Mark, give me your first one.
I just need to take a second here to say something, okay? Mm-hmm. So I've seen on social media the amount of response. It's been insane. You do not need me to sit here and talk about the same film again and again. So I have to say at this point, The Thing cannot be mentioned.
Yes.
Okay.
Of course it's a film that's a great cult film, but do you really want the next 5 minutes of me talking about something I get through on nearly every single episode so far?
Yeah.
Well,
and I'm sorry.
And can I echo that by saying it's the same reason why I haven't picked Blade Runner?
Perfect. Oh. Any for you? Do you want to get off your chest right now?
Now, let's just get stuck in, guys.
So let's talk about something new. Tommy Wiseau's The Room.
Same here!
We've never mentioned that. What is it? Tell me more.
Well, Ben, it was one of those films that you brought along to a rewatch probably around 2 years ago now. Yeah. And it's a film that I didn't even know existed. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm really intrigued. We have to watch it because it's the rewatch and we agreed to go and take it home and watch it. And I was absolutely blown away. Not in a good way at that point. I hated it. Me, you and Adam didn't get it. It was kind of that first watch where we're like, this is shit. I remember on the review, we scored it really low. Since then, it's become my favourite film of 1993 when we did Skip Back in Time. 2003, whichever year it was, whenever it was, it
timeless.
Made my
timeless,
year.
Yeah.
It is. And you know my obsession with this. I've been lucky enough to kind of sit down and talk with Tommy Wiseau, with Greg Sestero. We've been to see it in Birmingham. You've gone and seen it, Gemma, in London at the Prince Charles, which has it on every single year.
Certainly do.
For 14 nights, free showings a night, and it sells out every single time.
It does.
That, for me, is up there with the Rocky Horror Show as a cult classic.
Absolutely, yeah.
This film isn't available to actually go and see at the cinema unless you go to these cult screenings. It didn't come out and make it across like Odeon and The View and all this. It was a film that flopped. It cost $6 million to make, supposedly. I've never worked out where that money went. Since then, we've had The Disaster Artist, which we all absolutely loved and made us kind of fall back in love with Tommy Wiseau. He suddenly became this big celebrity overnight where everyone was doing his impressions, and I kind of felt like, hang on a minute, you weren't there at the start. He's yeah. our little secret, and now the whole world knows about him. The film makes no sense. It's about this bloke that falls in love with a girl called Lisa, and for some reason she has an affair. Why would you cheat on Tommy Wiseau? I mean, Johnny is the ultimate heartthrob, and it's just an atrocity of a film. But so much so, I don't think any filmmaker, if you're J.J. Abrams, if you're George Lucas, if you're whoever you are, you couldn't recreate the magic that Tommy did with his heart and soul of believing this is an amazing film.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, you cringe, you cry. But I believe in it, what has it been, 2 years, we've got this new appreciation and respect for Tommy because you couldn't ever replicate such a masterpiece.
That's so well put. I don't know what I can add to that other than to say I'm waiting for the inevitable The Room secret cinema event.
Oh my lord.
We have that bloody
Romeo and Juliet this week as an announcement. I was like, what are you doing? No. You're wasting your money. Give us The Room. We all want to be eating apples, watching people make out on the bed like Denny did, but this film has become an obsession.
So, just a bit.
I've dedicated a lot of my life to speaking to the cast. Every story you hear about working with Tommy is different. Mm-hmm. Every experience and every kind of memory that's been left with people that have been on set with him probably damaged them in some way. But my God, I absolutely love him and he's my idol. And to make this film, thank you, Tommy. I know you're listening. If I hadn't have said this, I think you both would have not known me at all.
Yeah, Gemma's got it as well. I want to hear Gemma's thoughts.
Oh, sorry, I've left you nothing.
It's fine, it's fine. However, you mentioned about doing it as secret cinema. Just an idea, Fabian, if you're listening, which of course you are, why don't you get everybody to dress up as plastic spoons?
That'd be a stretch, but I'd love to see it.
I'd rather than come in tuxedos with footballs. Yeah. That'd be easier.
Could do.
How would you dress up as a spoon?
Easy. I'm glad you asked me that. Basically, I'm thinking a bit of spandex with maybe a coat wire hanger sort of at the top of the head so it bases out as the actual spoon part of the cutlery.
She's thought about this.
That's a lot of thought going into it, yeah.
Every night, every day.
The easy option is the women just wearing Lisa's red dress that Tommy jizzes into at the end.
Yeah.
But still, spoon, come on, could be fun. I found out about this film from you guys, from the podcast.
As a listener.
Back when I was just a little listener in listenerland, and I genuinely couldn't believe any word that you guys were saying. I was like, there's no way this guy has gotten all this money from a leather jacket company. Come on. And I really didn't know what to make of it. I thought it was a piss take. I thought somebody had put him up for a dare and he'd somehow made this incredibly crazy film. But I watched it again and suddenly it didn't matter that it wasn't such good acting and didn't matter that the script made absolutely no bloody sense. There's some weird affinitive power about it. It just draws you in. And it clicked when I went to my very first screening. The heckles are legendary. Everybody chucking some plastic cutlery towards a great big massive projection is just crazy. And Tommy himself, the enigma of our time. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tommy Wiseau.
You were in the same room as him.
I was. I breathed the same bit of oxygen as him. I have Tommy Wiseau's particles in my lungs right now.
Did you ever think, I'm talking to Mark here specifically now, did you ever think we would be wearing Tommy Wiseau branded pants?
No.
And now we do.
No, it's weird, isn't it? He must have known. When he made those, he would have known they would have sold by the thousands.
Yeah.
Anything for my princesses.
I spent so much money at his website, honestly. It's ridiculous. I think I've got like 9 pairs of boxers, a headshot photo, 2 t-shirts, a hoodie, a zip-up jacket. And each time you buy he throws in another headshot photo of himself, which is easily only taken last week. It isn't 20 years ago.
Oh, definitely not.
He looks a bit like Brian May with kind of like no blood in his body, like a vampire. And he signs it every time, something different, like Love is Blind, You Will Be Forever, all these random things. But I've got them all at home in a nice little album.
Do you have enough now that you could wallpaper one of your rooms?
I need 3 more.
Do you know what? It's like Cy Parrish in 1 hour photo, except he's projecting his obsession to you.
And I'm absolutely fine and lapping up every little bit of it. So no Blade Runner for Ben. What the hell are you going to give us?
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time because we've just spent 20 minutes on the fucking room. So that's the end of the podcast. Cheerio. I'm going to go with an all-time classic. It's Office Space.
Yes!
It's a classic Mike Judge comedy from 1999. It's about a group of office drones who stumble upon a scheme to embezzle money from their uncaring company. Anyone who has ever worked in an office, as the three of us in this room have, know exactly what it's like to be a faceless drone, to be put upon and not appreciated. And then you can empathise with the characters, especially Peter, played with this world-weary slacker vibe by the great Ron Livingston. He's so laid back that he's practically fucking horizontal. But I get this dude. I know exactly where this dude's coming from. Every act, everything he does, everything he says, I've been there. I know what it's like to have these bosses who have these expectations of you that are unreasonable. And I sure as shit know what it's like to want to take a malfunctioning piece of not fit for purpose office equipment out and beat it to death with a baseball bat like they do with the malfunctioning printer.
Yeah.
I look at that and go, this is me. It's a depressing watch. It's supposed to be a comedy, but I watch it. It's like, have there been cameras following me? Is this a documentary of my life?
No, that's Falling Down, dude.
Oh, that's true. But it's such a great film with so many great characters. You've all got Milton, of course. I know you're a fan of Milton.
One of my favourite of all time. Just the way he mumbles.
This is
Stigler. He's a hero, though.
He is brilliant. I love how right near the start of the film, when he's pissed off, he mumbles that he's going to burn the place down
that's
if they
right.
move in once more. And then at the end of the film, that's precisely what he does. And then Gary Cole as the smarmy office VP, Bill Lumberg, is one of my favourite movie villains of all time. He's such a laid-back, almost invisible villain. He's not outlandishly villainous, but it's just that kind of, yeah, so, well, I'm going to have to ask you to go ahead and come in on Saturday and finish, you prick.
Yeah, you just dread him. And there's always someone, I can't use the name because it'll come back and kind of bite me on the ass. We've all worked with someone like him.
Mm.
I'm thinking of him right now. Mm-hmm. I just want to throw a bottle in his face. But what I want to say is we've all had that kind of subtle, I'm on your side, but I'm not, and I'm stabbing you in the back just as I'm smiling.
Kind of passive-aggressive. There's no way you can say no to that guy because he pays you wages.
I know.
God.
That would be great.
This could turn into a counselling session for me and Ben right now. We've been in the same workplace for many years.
I'm feeling traumatised right now.
I feel like
now.
I need to adjudicate.
And we all know how we can relate with Milton for wanting to burn the place down.
Yep.
If by any chance this building that we did work at does go up in flames, I just want to say right now it wasn't me.
Yeah, and if it did, it would actually be the second workplace I've been at that would have burned down. Weirdly enough, the first one, Mark, being your favourite place, Pizza Hut.
Oh, dude, what are you doing?
It wasn't me.
No, good.
In the words of Shaggy, it wasn't me. But this film absolutely died at the box office, mainly due to terrible promotion campaign by Fox. They just didn't like the look of it. They put out these trailers that didn't sell what the actual film was at all, so it died on its arse. But I found some records the other day, and as of 2006, it had sold over 6 million copies on DVD in the US alone. So in the intervening 12 years, you've got to assume that number's gone up quite a bit, especially worldwide. So to think that, let's imagine 10 million people have got this now on DVD, Blu-ray. And the fact that it was a colossal flop, that is your definition of a cult movie, isn't
it? You couldn't get much bigger, I think, of a jump.
Yeah.
Even The Room hasn't sold that many on Blu-ray or DVD on his own website. And I bought
should.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
A hell of a lot. Wow, what a great start.
Yeah.
Back around. Right, I'm hoping you don't have the same one now, Gemma.
Come on.
And I don't think you will.
Is this going to be like the other episode?
I've only picked this to piss Ben off.
Okay. Okay.
So it's Clerks.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I knew
that was coming.
Guess what? I don't have it on my
good,
list.
Good.
You have to admit, when you think of cult films, you do think of Clerks. It's that black and white, very low budget, lower than The Room. It cost a few thousand. He maxed out some credit cards, sold his comic book collection, and basically just about funded it to make, I think, probably like £30,000 or something. It wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
Why?
You can tell because, Ben, you only watched this for the first time within the last 12 months.
Uh-huh.
And your exact words were, no one can act and it looks shit.
Yup. And I stand by that assessment.
But it's got a big, big place in my heart. I love the Viewersky universe. I do love Kevin Smith. I think he's an absolute idol of mine. And this film is quirky. It's funny. I watched it during university. I think it's very well made for the money. I think it's silly. I think the characters are very great. Like, Jay and Silent Bob, for me, are iconic. They're one of the best duos out there. They're still good now. I'm not sure if he should bring them back for whatever's next, Jay and Silent Bob, the reboot. I think we're just about done with Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes in their 40s trying to be 25 years old. Mm-hmm. I think it's not going to work. But for Clerks, it was ideal. It looks so poorly made. It's done in a shop in New Jersey, which he used to work at. And as Ben just said then when he introduced Office Space, for anyone that's ever worked in retail, you will see the anger that goes through Brody and Randall in this, and you can relate. You get stupid, fuckwit customers coming in and asking the most stupid questions. I used to work in a well-branded TV store where people would come in, mostly richer people, if that helps you try and work out who it is.
Hint, hint.
And you would get the most stupid questions. Does this TV come with a bracket? Does this TV have Freeview built in? What does it mean when it says on the front teletext? And you're just sitting there like, please, read a book.
How old are you?
In 1877. But you do get the most stupid questions ever. And you sit there and watch this film kind of just feeling sorry, because you know Kevin's gone through this, you know, and lived it and had these customers. That's how he's wrote these stories that he's put into the film. Coming in and checking eggs for the perfect batch of six. So tiresome, but it happens every single day. So if you're working in retail right now, I completely sympathise for you, because you get so many idiots. But the film is very well done. I've always, always going to go back to this film as one of my favourites of Kevin Smith, because it launched his career. And I know we joke about stuff like yoga hoses, but we have had stuff like Mallrats. We've had, you know, Dogma.
Red State.
And Red State's a great horror. It is beautifully well done. And we've had some. I'm going to do all I can to fight for Kevin during this last couple of minutes. But it's a great, great film. And again, stuff like Tarantino's watched this and said at times it influenced him. I don't know how. I've never seen it.
I don't think he said that.
I think he said
he liked it. I don't think it influenced him.
Did you wake up afterwards?
But it's one of the biggest cult films of all time, and it was always going to make my list. This and The Room were guaranteed lock-ins. I hope I might surprise you with my third choice.
I hope so.
But you can't really input, because you hate the film. Like, Gemma, have you ever seen it?
Which one?
The first Clerks.
Yes, a very long time ago.
Don't pull that face. Oh, it's face. Still a long time ago.
She looked like she just smelt a fart.
But at least we haven't got a duplet.
That's true.
Duplet. We haven't got a duplet. A duplication.
There we go. Well done.
Give me your next one.
Okay, I'm going back to the 70s on this one.
Ooh.
And it's directed by Hal Ashby, and it's called Harold and Maude.
I've not seen this.
Haven't you? It's good.
So it better be if it's your choice. Tell me why it's good.
Okay, so it's about a young lad called Harold who is obsessed with death. And in his spare time, he likes to shock his rich mother by staging these gory and elaborate suicide scenes. Mm. It's a bit uncomfortable when you first watch it because they don't hold back on the red stuff. But he meets this 79-year-old woman at a funeral, which he likes doing in his spare time, called Maude. And she's the complete polar opposite of what Harold is. So she loves life. She likes making every day count, whereas Harold just wants to stoop in his mirrors. Technically, he's kind of like a Smith song. Just basks in his own sadness and just wants it all to wash away. And the relationship turns from curiosity to platonic to eventually, yes, a sexual development.
Hold on, wait a minute. What's their ages again?
He's about 20.
And she's 79-ish.
Ugh.
Oh, God.
It'd be like opening a cheese toastie.
Ugh. Grave robber.
Grave robber.
What cheese do you eat? My goodness.
Just picture a cheese toastie opening.
No,
right now.
Don't
picture,
like,
move on.
I'm
move
going
on.
To carry on. But you never see anything. It's purely down to how their personalities clash and develop over time. And the film never transcends into this seediness or the spectacle that you would expect it to. There is one scene where a priest starts talking to Harold about how he disapproves of this relationship that he has with her. And he starts crudely commenting on her body and what he thinks he sees when he sees her. But it's an absolutely beautifully sweet film about enjoying life and just being joyful with it, appreciating what you have. And Ruth Gordon as Maude steals every single scene she's in. She's just an absolute delight. She's funny. She has this effervescent nature and she's just so bloody sweet. She kind of just gives Harold this nudge that, you know what, life's wonderful. Stop being so fucking depressing. Mm-hmm. Get your ass out there and live it to the best of your ability. But a wonderful film.
So are you kind of saying that if you're listening to this podcast, you're feeling a bit down the dumps, you're at home, you might be a bit depressed, go and have sex with an old person?
I didn't say that, you said that.
That's old people.
My knowledge of this film is limited to what I know of it from, what's the film with Ben Stiller and Cameron Diaz?
Oh, Something About Mary.
Yeah.
Magda?
Well, no, not Magda. Oh. Because Stiller and Diaz's characters bond over their love of this film.
They do.
They both believe it to be the greatest love story ever told.
Oh,
that's all I know about this film.
It is just such a sweet little... And the whole soundtrack is by Cat Stevens, or now known as Yusuf Islam. Lovely, lovely soundtrack. And the main song from Extras is used in this song.
Oh.
Really, really lovely.
I don't really see how it can be sweet. I'll have to watch it, but seeing this young chap with her grandma.
Clerks, yeah. You know?
Does she like take her teeth out before bed?
No.
There's nothing sweet about that. I just can't picture it.
Granny banging.
Yeah.
It's my choice and I'm sticking to it.
It's a good choice, and because I haven't seen it, one day I'll check it out. Maybe when I'm in an old person's home.
Yes. Ben, taking my teeth out.
Ben, what's your next pick? Quick.
Save me, dude.
Oh, sorry. So my next pick is a film called Repo Man.
I've not seen this.
Oh, my God.
And I own it.
Oh, really?
Avo brought out a really nice version of it, and I haven't got round to it.
Get on it. Gemma, have you seen it?
Oh, my God. I've heard of it, but I don't know if I have or have not seen it, but I really want to listen to it again.
It's so good. So it's from 1984, and it's the story of an aimless punk played by Emilio Estevez, who ends up becoming a repo man and taken under the wing of a grizzled veteran played by Harry Dean Stanton. And then the plot revolves around various parties trying to hunt down this Chevy Malibu that may or may not contain an extraterrestrial entity in the trunk.
Relatable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is unlike anything I've ever seen before or since. It's difficult to categorise, really. It's kind of a low-key comedy, but with satirical elements and a touch of sci-fi. It's very low budget. It's very low budget with incredibly ropey effects that are even ropey, I think, by 1984 standards. But it has a real punk DIY kind of vibe to it because it was written and directed by Alex Cox, who also wrote and directed Sid and Nancy.
Oh,
so if love you, that
if you,
film.
Exactly. So if you like the aesthetic of that film, you'll like the aesthetic mm-hmm. of Repo Man. But as wild and weird and wacky as the story is, it's down to the acting, the characters. Estevez is absolutely amazing as the lead. And it's a shame. He's one of those guys who he's always kind of been in his dad's shadow, you know, Martin Sheen, and even his brother's shadow, mm-hmm. Charlie Sheen, to a lesser degree. But Emilio Estevez, in the 80s, was a fairly big name. He was part of that Brat Pack. And I wish he'd have gone on to do more because he's great in this. But the film is stolen entirely from him by Harry Dean Stanton, who is just so good as this grizzled old bastard. He has this unwavering moral code, but he has a general hatred for what he refers to as ordinary fucking people. He just hates them. And he's so great. And you just, whenever he's on the screen, you're mesmerised by it. And then whenever he's not on the screen, you're like, where's he? I wish he'd come back. I just want more of him. But they're so great together. And it's... you can't do it justice unless you've seen it, really, because, as I say, there's no comparison. There's nothing I can compare it to and say, oh, if you know, you'll like this if you like that, really, other than Sid and Nancy. You've got to watch it.
I don't think I have seen it.
I'm going to watch it. That's one good thing about it.
Yeah, Sid and Nancy is gritty, too. It just looks like it's been doused in grease, and it's such a good film, but I really want to check this out.
And the thing is, it's not just one of those films that's kind of, you know, shit, but people have latched onto it. It was actually really critically acclaimed when it came out. The reviews were great. People said, this is fantastic. It's unique. No one else is out there doing this. But for whatever reason, the public just didn't latch onto it. It just wasn't a success because it was a small indie. It didn't get a lot of promotion.
Mm.
But thankfully, in the intervening years, people have realised that it's worth a watch.
And great has he film. Had much of a career since then? Did he do much after that? Or was it just, that's it?
Who, Alex Cox?
Yeah.
Very little.
That's a shame.
He co-wrote... Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh, that's not a
great.
Bad thing to have on your CV.
But that's really it. He's done a lot of really low-budget indies. Like, he did a sequel to Repo Man called Repo Girl, I think. or called Repo Chick. And it's all filmed in front of green screen. And if you go onto YouTube and look up the trailer for Repo Chick, fuck me.
That's a future rewatch.
Horrendous.
Oh, please, no.
It sounds like Birdemic.
Mate, it's... Yeah. At least Birdemic was filmed actually outside in real locations.
Yeah.
This wasn't. It's not great. So yeah, he's not had a great career, sadly, but Repo Man is a towering achievement for me. Get involved.
I will, as I say on every episode, I'll go home and I'll watch it, but that sounds like one, because I own it and I bought all the Arrow set. I can't have any missing. If they're pieces of shit, I have to, because it just doesn't look right on your shelf when they're numbered and they've got all these different covers. I have to watch it, so I will. I'll give you that.
And sorry to spoil the very end of the film, but I'm pretty sure it's the final line. Throughout the film, Emilio Estevez has kind of been on and off with this girl, and then he's basically going to do one at the end of the film, and she says to him, but what about our relationship? And he responds, fuck that. And I'm pretty sure it's the last line in the film.
Now I'm definitely going to watch it. My final choice is Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, God.
And so is mine.
Really?
Yeah.
High five.
Let Bridge go first.
Here's the baton of Napoleon.
Oh, thank you.
Go for it.
Handed. So it stars John Heed as the titular character. Titular? Who's that?
I give her the baton and she fucks up already.
Take the baton back.
Yeah. Basically, he goes through life feeding llamas, helping his Bezzy mate win for class president, and stunning his school with his sweet dance moves. And it was a film that split people very 50-50. You either really liked it, thought it was hilarious and the greatest thing alive, or you just didn't get it and it made no sense. I was kind of in the middle. because I did want to like it, but there were so many things that made me go, I really don't understand why this bit's in. I mean, ordering a time machine and forgetting to put the crystals before they switch it on. What's that? Where does that fit in the narrative?
Easy mistake to make. Yeah. Easy.
But after watching it copious amounts of times, I absolutely adore this. And it's just, that's the film. It's just a series of skits that follows in this kind of world of going to school and just being. I mean, he doesn't really care about the fact he's not popular or he has a sweet chick by his side, apart from Deb at the end.
Yeah.
But he's just being him. And I find that really, really endearing to watch. But there's so many lovable characters in it. You got Deb, you got Uncle Rico, you got Kip, La Fonda, and of course, Pedro.
They're probably the most quirky, unique characters that have ever been assembled into a film. Ever.
Assembled.
Yeah. Assembled. I'm doing all right. 24 minutes in and I've fucking done it and I wanted to try and go the whole episode.
It's all right. I've already done one too, so it's all good.
We're doing okay. But Kip. Oh my God.
Your mom goes to college.
Just to be jealous because I've been sitting here talking to hard chicks all day. He's just such a weedy, puny little guy.
Although he looks different when he puts his glasses off.
Oh, and when he has like his little headscarf on and stuff and he's like, peace out. He's amazing.
I would love to know how much of this film was improvised. Because if it was a case of, you know, setting them in a room, starting the cameras up and saying, just riff, just talk, I can understand where all this weirdness and this kind of, almost, like you said, Gemma, it seems like sketches.
It does.
I can see where that would come from. Part of me wants it to be mostly improvised because I think, well, they're geniuses then. But the other part of me wants it not to be because then Jared and Jerusha Hess are geniuses for coming up with this nonsense.
Yeah.
Because how can you write that? How would you come up with this shit?
It's almost like they watched so many teen movies and says, right, we're going to do the exact opposite of that because I think teen movies as a genre is so saturated and this is completely on the other end of the spectrum.
Mm.
Completely.
It's probably the biggest one-hit wonder ever because Jared Hess after that just released Nacho Libre, which I, in my opinion, think is a shite film.
Yep.
And he's never done anything good since. Yeah. I think he should have just retired, done Napoleon Dynamite and gone, I'm done. And he'd have been a legend.
Some people just have one good idea in them.
That's us.
Yeah.
But it's true, and like even like John Hedwig, he's great in Blades of Glory.
Yeah. He is.
But he's just not done much since. He's done a lot of voiceover work and stuff like that. And I don't want him to ever go back and try and do Napoleon again because it's been too long.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect film that made me be late for my wedding, which will always be a big part of my life. And it is hilarious. And the first time I watched it, Gemma, I was on the wrong side of the fence. I was like, this is shit. Why the hell is he sitting there talking about tacos? And why is he sitting there talking about eggs? And why is he in a chicken farm? And why are they dancing to bloody Jamiroquai? It didn't make sense. Yeah. The second time I watched it, it clicked. Mm-hmm. And then I've watched it 100 times since. And I just grow and grow and love every little thing about it. It's incredible.
Wonderful. It is.
It is about it clicking. It's when you get on that wavelength with the sense of humour, then you realise that it's a work of art and a work of genius.
We did try to get Adam on our side.
Yeah, it didn't
work. But he just didn't work.
So I'm going to finish it off with one that I expected one or both of you to have. And it's Donnie Darko.
Oh, what a classic.
Yes. Yeah, it's Richard Kelly's 2001 trippy sci-fi about time travel, predestination and a sinister bunny rabbit. The film notoriously had a really troubled release. It came out on a limited run shortly after 9/11 when people just weren't really in the mood for weird films about twisted bunny rabbits, I would have thought. And then it didn't really see an international release for about another year after that. And apparently something I read the other day was the way that they actually, Richard Kelly managed to persuade them to release it was because Christopher Nolan got involved.
I never knew
that. No, I never knew that.
Apparently
Nolan had seen it and was like, this needs to be seen. And he persuaded the distribution company to get on board and actually release the fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a brilliant film. And it's been a runaway success on the home video market to the point where there's not just one release. There's special editions, there's director's cuts, there's 4K restorations. For a film that died on its arse at the box office, to think that it's had so many different releases, that's extraordinary. And it's one of those films that gets better and better and deeper every time I see it. There's always more stuff to see, more stuff to get your head around. And it's one of those things like Lost, like the TV show Lost. We've discussed this before, but it's one of those that's deeper when you go on the internet and start reading theories and, you know, other people's opinions of how things work and what things mean. That community that came up around the film really deepens people's enjoyment of it. And I just fucking love this movie.
It's one of my favourite rewatches we've ever done. I remember when at the very end, I think I said, Ben, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what's going on.
Mm.
And I'm not going to even kind of go through that again because you gave the best explanation ever, and I remember going back and listening to it thinking, fucking hell, Ben just nailed that. So go back and listen to that rewatch, because he kind of sums up exactly what was going on and what the rabbit was about and what the different time frames were about, and you've just absolutely nailed it. So go back and listen to that. As you're listening now, pause it, go back to that episode and come back, because it's one of Ben's finest moments. But to have that film shelved for so many years with such a great cast, like Jakey Boy now. Yeah. Look at that. That's one of his starting films, which is unbelievable. And Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, one of his last roles.
You know
roles,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a great turn from Swayze.
Unbelievable. And I love the different theories. The fact that no one actually... He's never come out, has he, the director, and said, well, this is exactly what happened.
No.
He left it open.
Yeah, exactly. So the director's cut fills in a few of the blanks. And then the philosophy of time travel book that's mentioned in the film, he then released excerpts from that book that again fills in more of the blanks, but it's still open to interpretation.
I remember when the website was around during the time of the release, and you had to solve puzzles and riddles in order to get to the next stage. It was just fantastic marketing from the team.
He did a bit of a Jared Hess as well. I've never seen him really do that well.
Again, you know, I will always stand up for Southland Tales. I'm not going to claim it's a good movie, but it's a fascinating movie.
But nothing else after that.
No. He did. Was it The Box he did?
Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
It was okay, but it really did lose its way.
And I think that's it. I don't know that he's done anything since.
That was proper false advertising. It told me that I would see Cameron Diaz's Box, and I never did.
Should we go home, Gemma?
Let's.
How can we get out of this? Social media? Could that help us?
Yes.
We can try. So firstly, we're going to go to Twitter. So Jake Palmer, at Jake Palmer 04, said, Near Dark.
Brilliant horror.
Good.
Stick that on the DVD cover.
We could do La Haine.
Amazing French film. Brilliant.
And Dead Man's Shoes.
Oh, unreal.
I've not seen it.
Have you still not seen it? Oh, man.
Right.
Pick it as a rewatch, guys. That's the only way I'll get on my arse and do it.
I'm greatly offended you've not seen it.
Sorry.
Erica at Survey Babe said, Office Space, agreed with you, Ben.
Excellent.
The Craft, which is awesome.
It's about the Coven of Witches.
Yeah. Sadly being remade. Shocking. And previous rewatch, Starship Troopers.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Ashley Shaw at Ash Not a Tree said, The Warriors.
Yeah.
Warriors come out to play.
Clue and The Princess Bride.
Yeah. Oh, skip to the end.
And Jenny Hart at Roldemort XOXO. Oh, thank God, I thought I was going to pull a mark then. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Christine.
Oh, Evil Car.
Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing.
And Death Race 2000.
I've not seen that.
Is that Jason Statham?
Didn't he do a remake?
Yeah, sorry.
Probably better.
It is Statham after all. Then we're going to go to Facebook. Simon Williams said Slither.
That's a great film. It is. James Gunn.
Yeah. Big Trouble in Little China.
Amazing.
Masterpiece.
And They Live.
Another masterpiece.
Yep. Indeed. Rebecca Pawsey said Bad Taste.
Brilliant
I've
film.
I've not seen that in such a long time.
I literally just know the cover. It's with the ugly alien thing giving the finger.
It's brilliant.
Brain Dead.
Amazing. Peter Jackson.
And Tremors.
Incredible. How did that not make Ben's list?
Did you see there was going to be a TV series of Tremors, but
I
it's been cancelled.
Why?
Yeah, well, and it actually stars Kevin Bacon, but they've released the initial trailer to show what it would have looked like if it had gone to series. Watch the trailer. People are saying it looks amazing.
One day, we will get our time.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, if that can be resurrected overnight,
Tremors.
Bring back Tremors.
Yeah. I'm so happy Nine-Nine's come back.
What a tease.
I love that show,
Me
man.
Too.
Have to break your heart overnight and then resurrect it.
I know.
It shouldn't happen.
Then finally, we're going to go to Instagram. So Susie B at Suzarella_Bananason said, if 1960 film, brilliant, brilliant film. It's
You've
one
mentioned
of my,
this before, yeah.
It is superb. Go and check it out if you haven't seen it.
Nah.
The Wicker Man. Fuck you.
The Wicker Man, that's good.
Which one?
The original.
Oh.
And finally, Akira.
Excellent. Oh,
some amazing stuff from social media.
Yep.
Thank you. Keep them coming.
So, guys, I think this has been one of my favourite topics, so I'm going to have to really pull something out the bag.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
But I'm going to make you two work like bastards. We're going to have a topic where we really have to dig deep. So on the next episode, we're going to go to our top three straight-to-DVD movies. We've been to our local View cinema to see Deadpool 2. Guess what? That's the sequel to Deadpool 1.
Never.
No.
This time round, the wisecracking mercenary joins forces with three mutants to protect a boy from the all-powerful Cable. And in true, typical skip-to-the-end fashion, we will be discussing the plot of this film in great detail. You know the score by now. We're going to give you shitloads of spoilers. You've been warned. Go and watch it and come back when you're ready. Right then, this is a big one. So I think what we should do is decide, is this Deadpool 2 or Deadpool Poo? There's nothing two to say good. It's got to be two or poo.
He was not prompted.
I'm going to throw this to Ben, who is famous for his last rant when we reviewed this many moons ago, and he bloody hated the first one.
I did hate the first one, and I would say that this second one, the first half of the film, is damn near unwatchable. I thought it was absolute dog shit. The second half of the film gets considerably better, and I found myself enjoying it by the end, but the first half was a goddamn slog.
Do you agree, or are you on the good side of the poo?
Meh. Is all I can say. I was very underwhelmed by it. There was a few points where I did laugh, but not proper full-on belly laugh out loud moments. I found it to be a lot smaller than the first film. But yeah, it's nothing special. It's not sticking out for me.
I don't know why, but I enjoyed it a lot. And maybe because I've got to the point where I know what I expect when I go and see Deadpool now. Yeah. It's going to be the same sort of jokes again. It's going to be the same toilet humour, and it's going to be the same kind of breaking the fourth wall again a lot. And because I enjoyed it first time round, to have it again, it was a nice reminder. So I enjoyed it. I had a good time tonight.
Yeah. So you've enjoyed it because it was more of the same.
Yeah.
And this is precisely why I didn't enjoy it, because it was more of the same. It was the same problems as the first one, the random sweary insults. So the first insult he calls someone is pumpkin fucker. and it had no relation to anything. If it was like set at Halloween, then fine, pumpkin fucker, I would imagine, as being a relatively witty gag. But there was no relevance to it. Why is he fucking a pumpkin? Could have been fucking anything. It's just witless. There's no rhyme or reason behind the insults. You can be very creative with profanity. You only need to watch something like Veep or The Thick of It. Anything that Armando Iannucci has had anything to do with, you'll see creative use of profanity. But this, it's just saying fuck in odd ways, purely for the sake of it.
I feel it's very self-aware. The first film was kind of a bit of a niche because we hadn't really seen that in, well, especially in Marvel films. But I feel like it's too aware of its own good.
Yeah.
It knows what it's good at. It knows what it's famous for. And I think it really did kind of exploit that a lot. But yeah, just...
It's been a while since we've actually all been on a different page where I think the last few films we both absolutely adored. For me, it was like getting a pizza at night. You enjoy it. And then the next day, it reminds you when you have it the next morning, oh, I bloody love pizza. So for me, like you said, Ben, I enjoyed it. I got to have it at night and then wake up and have it again in the morning.
I'm saying it now. That is a full-on Gemmerism.
Yeah, I don't understand that metaphor at all.
having more of what you enjoyed a while back. You know,
so Deadpool 1 was last night's pizza, and Deadpool 2 is this morning's pizza. I get you, in a way, kinda.
This is Pizza Cast, isn't it? And you know there's going to be a lot more pizza talk. Should we talk about the characters?
Yeah.
Sure. Let's talk about the... I'm going to go straight in with Cable.
Mm.
I think right now, you know, a couple of years ago when we started the podcast, we talked about Matthew McConaughey and he was doing everything and we loved him.
Yeah.
Right now, Josh Brolin is my favourite man in the world.
Yeah, he's awesome. And he's everywhere.
I absolutely fucking adore him. And I don't... Considering we've only watched a film 2 weeks ago with him in, I'm not sick of him. I want to see him cast in every film for the next 6 years.
Mm-hmm. That's very specific. Yeah. Six. Not five. If it was seven,
minimum.
I'd be furious. That's overkill.
Are you on the same page? Did you enjoy his character in this?
I absolutely did, because I'm an old school fan of Cable from the comics. I think Josh Brolin was an inspired casting choice. I liked how he played it straight. He didn't lean into the jokes. He was very deadpan. But watching him play it deadpan made me think, I just wish he was in one of the proper X-Men films. Yeah. Rather than this piss-take X-Men, I just wish he was really in it. I wish he was in the upcoming X-Men film next year or whenever it comes out.
Yeah, he totally commanded every scene he was in. I was more interested in seeing him whenever he popped up. It's like, I want more Cable. I want more Josh Brolin. He's perfect for this casting.
I spent a lot of podcasts kind of being aroused by Ryan Gosling, haven't I?
Yes, too many.
Well,
too many.
Don't we know it? We've seen it.
Not in the way I'd like, but he's been put to bed now.
Well,
I actually find Josh Brolin the coolest looking guy in the world. His hair, his attitude, his body.
He was stacked as well.
How old is he?
He's nearly 50, I think, and he was stacked.
I would dream to look like that at 20, never mind 50.
Yeah.
He's the coolest man in the world right now.
You're literally talking about him like I used to talk about the Backstreet Boys when I was 16. You were fangirling all over the place right now.
He's done well since The Goonies.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Corey Feldman has.
Obviously.
Of course.
What about the rest of the cast?
I thought Domino was great, played by Zazie Beetz from Atlanta. But again, I felt like she deserved a better film. I think she would have been a better addition to one of the real X-Men films rather than this. But I thought she was a lot of fun.
I liked her. She was badass. She was cool. She was sexy, but she was just really assertive, really knew herself. But yeah, she wasn't as established enough. And I kind of wanted more Domino.
I think that's going to be the kind of theme for you, Ben, because you've seen these good characters that put in good performance, but it's just wasted in the film that you don't enjoy.
Exactly. And let me go on to why I don't enjoy it. So I said I didn't like the first half. I thought the first half of the film, spoiler alert, after Deadpool's missus dies, he then gets into this suicidal funk. And the film is just really weirdly melodramatic for the first half. It's kind of dull and soppy, and you're just like, when's this going to get funny? When's this going to kick in? And it kicks in when he forms the X-Force team. From that point onwards, once Cable's on the scene, he forms his superhero team. Everything after that was quite entertaining, quite fun, but everything prior to that was just so boring and so dull.
And the shift change was as big as kind of From Dusk Till Dawn, because it was a massive jump. Yeah. It wasn't just gradually got there. It just suddenly, when he met these group of people and got all these established characters, it kicked off. Even the special effects and the explosions, everything just came alive after about an hour.
I did
like that whole section when he assembled the X-Force. I thought that was quite cool, a little bit of comedy. And we saw the likes of Rob Delaney. We saw Bill Skarsgård, who recently played Pennywise of It. And we also saw a little cameo. Did you boys spot it?
Oh, Bradley Pitt.
Bradley Pitt.
Was it him?
It was indeed.
It was a lookalike.
The invisible dude.
No. Mr. Interview with a Vampire himself.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Me too. I was like, hello. But Rob Delaney, especially as Pete, Everman. I really like Catastrophe. If you haven't seen this show, go
Great
and watch
show.
It.
Great
it's superb.
Show.
Rob Delaney is a master of comedy. Mm-hmm. I wish I had more Rob Delaney. Rob Delaney cast. That's what I'm going to call it.
You said at the start, Gemma, you didn't find it as funny. You were kind of just not really laughing. The cinema seemed to be laughing all the way through
it. They really did. They loved it, didn't they?
I wasn't. I don't know what they were laughing at.
Did you hear that guy in the corner go, ha 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 ha? Everything. It's like...
The one thing that raised a chuckle from me is there's a scene quite near the start when Deadpool goes to the X-Mansion and he makes a comment about, you know, why are they stuck with Colossus? Why haven't they ponied up for one of the proper X-Men? And then you see a door open and it's all the characters from the upcoming X-Men film just quietly closing the door on him. I like that. That was a nice little callback, a nice little cameo, a good joke.
Yeah. That was cool.
But the rest of the jokes didn't really work for you?
Not at all, because it was the same shit. It was just random swear words.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's good for me. That's my level of just to appreciate anything. Just give me lots of fucks. And a few cunts were in this as
there were
well.
There were a couple of cunts, yeah.
Yeah. Old C-bomb, take cover.
We're allowed to say it like that, so
we're
get away with it.
We're quoting, yeah. Normally we'd bleep it out, but we're not going to this time. So fuck yeah.
But it was the same. It was recycled. It was saving the earth by recycling the same old jokes that we've already been familiar with. You know, Ryan Reynolds is charismatic.
Yeah.
He's a great screen presence, although we don't really get to see his face for much of the film. But I've seen it all before.
Yeah, and speaking of not seeing his face, I think they really skimped on the makeup, because he's supposed to be this burn victim, this horribly disfigured dude. And he did look like that at the tail end of the last film. But in this one, they've leaned back on it, and now he just looks like Ryan Reynolds with acne scars.
Yeah,
that's true.
He just doesn't look deformed anymore. Mm-hmm. Without his hood on, he just looks like Ryan Reynolds, but not quite as hot as he normally looks.
Picking up on that word you used, deformed. Yeah. Now, there is a scene in this film that will stick with a lot of people, and I think it might have made you furious, but I found it funny. The baby legs.
Yeah, I did nothing for
you. I'm with you, Mark.
That was quite funny. I was just like, this is wrong. And then you see a baby penis.
Oh, yeah. I've blocked that out of my memory. Brilliant. Let's just come back.
That ranks up there with me with the Simpsons movie when you see Bart's little yellow dick. Of being highly unnecessary and not funny.
I can't be sitting here praising stuff like that. It makes me seem a bit weird.
Yeah, it does.
A little bit.
But that was a scene that, let's be honest about it, everyone in the cinema was like, oh my God!
Yeah.
I think the only scene that I uniformly liked from start to finish was the attack of Deadpool and Domino on that convoy. You know, the convoy that was taking the prisoners to a different location.
Yeah.
I thought that was brilliantly shot, really kinetic, great action. The fights between them and Cable, I think, were brilliantly shot. That was a lot of fun. That was really good. That's when I finally felt like the film was starting to come together as something.
Yeah. What was nice as well is I hadn't read much about this film. Usually I'm reading reviews and getting spoilers, and I didn't know that Juggernaut was going to be in this film.
I don't think anyone's mentioned that.
Which is good. We've just seen it as it's come out.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it was a lot better than Vinnie Jones.
Yes and no. at least Vinnie Jones was a real man in a suit and looked almost human. The CGI juggernaut looked terrible. So rubbery.
Looked like a pixelated Big Show.
See, they should have just got Big Show. Just put a metal helmet on Big Show and it would have looked better than this shitty CGI.
I might have liked it a little bit more.
Yeah, but I do miss the, I'm Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah, I thought, because they're so like referential to things that have come before, I was expecting a joke about Vinnie Jones or them using that line or something. And they didn't, they just made out like it had never happened before, which is odd for that film, really.
Yeah, just popped another Thanos joke in instead.
Yeah. Mm.
So what were your thoughts then when actually Cable turned on the good side and he was all being nice and he kind of join forces again, kind of go against this little kid?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was obviously going to happen, wasn't it? So it wasn't a surprise in any way, shape or form. It was just how long into the film was it going to happen?
Do you like the kid?
I didn't care for him one way or the other, really.
He wasn't good for you, not a fear factor. He didn't have any power, just annoying.
Oh, he's great in Hunt for the Wilder People by Taika Waititi.
That's where I've seen
Ricky
him before.
Ricky Baker, Skag's Life.
But it's, I don't like his hair. I know I shouldn't
it's
pick
very
him, but it's
emo.
It's very school disco when I was a kid.
It's that kid in South Park, you know, the bunch of emo
kids.
It's him flipping the fringe all the time.
Yeah, too emo.
To the Cure.
So coming back to something that Gemma was saying there about how it's just more of the same, I can't see any value in them doing any more of these films. What could a third version of this be? It would just be the same thing again. We're already getting diminishing returns. It would just be further diminished. But of course they will do a third one because there's money to be made.
And we're going to review it just to piss you off.
You'll
be furious at that point. You wouldn't. I think you'd actually just veto it.
The thing is, I wouldn't mind, I don't think, because I didn't hate this one like I hated the first one because I knew exactly what I was in for this time round.
Yeah.
So I think it's equally poor, but it didn't aggravate me as much.
And for me, it'd be like having pizza the night before,
and
the following morning, and then lunch.
Oh.
And that's too much.
Yeah, that's what you're doing when you're unemployed.
Well, we're getting into the pizza. I think we should wrap it up there, because it's going to become Pizza Cast. I can't be having that. I'm not having that. Come on, Ben, you start.
Oh, I think 6 is fair, and that's mostly for Josh Brolin.
Yeah. Gemma?
I'm going with Ben. 6 out of 10 for me. Brolin.
Seems a bit low, so I like it. I'm going to say 7.
He's going to give it a 9.
Film of the year. Film of the year. 7. But that still is an overall skip to the end. 6 out of 10.
Sweet baby Jesus. Wish I could jump in there and roll around in all that cascading white powder. Yeah, just get high in all of life's splendor. God, I love cocaine.
It's competition time! If you'd listened to our last episode, which was Avengers Infinity War, which was a huge, huge success, and a lot of people were agreeing with our thoughts, on that episode we ran a competition to win a number of fantastic prizes. Kicking things off, we gave away some Funkos for Thor, Spider-Man, Thanos, Captain America, and Iron Man as a big bundle. The simple question was, what rating did we give Avengers Infinity War? So, Gemma?
9.
9 out of 10, which is a bloody high rating.
It's big.
Still not my movie of the year, though, unlike every other film that's ever been released in 2018. Paula Manning on email will be getting that big bunch of Funkos in the post. And as always, I keep saying it, I want to see you tweet the pictures, because we bloody love seeing people with their prizes.
Indeed.
That means a big bunch of funk.
Nice. Last Exit to Nowhere came along and they gave us some amazing t-shirts to tie in with the actual masturbate, which was Julianne Moore. And what they gave us was the Jackie Treehorn Productions t-shirt. And the simple question was, what was the name of the character that Julianne Moore played in The Big Lebowski? So, Ben?
Maud.
It is Maud. Is that Ned's wife on The Simpsons as well? Is that Maud?
Yeah, but she's dead.
She is dead. And the winner of this is going to be Liam McLeod, who came through on email. And he's a huge, huge fan of the podcast, he said. So, you know, you say that before you start with the answers of the competition, you're going to get noticed.
Yeah.
Also, as our rewatch was Ghostbusters, we had a beautiful Stay Puft t-shirt from our good friends at Last Exit to Nowhere. Simple question was, what score did we give the rewatch of Ghostbusters? So, Gemma?
10 out of 10.
And the winner is going to be David Buckle. And this is why he's won. Look at his commitment on Twitter. his two kids in Ghostbusters outfits. That's awesome. So he'll get it now, and his two kids, and they can have a photo of all of them loving Skip to the End. Which, did you see this week as well? One of our listeners, Lyndon, had his whole family and his wife and kids in our T-shirts.
Yeah.
That's the dedication that gets you noticed.
I love that picture from Lyndon, because it's got, as you say, his wife and his kids and his family. And I love how the little baby is looking up his parents like, what the fuck am I doing with
these? He's like, I want an Empire T-shirt. Our good friends at Richer Sounds came along with some JBL Bluetooth speakers that are waterproof. So as we said, you can listen to it in the bath, in the shower, if you're drowning in a river. Yep. You can listen. You know, if you're drowning in a river, the last thing you want to do is be miserable. So stick on Skip to the End and then go down.
People do say that when you drown, you reach that point where you just accept your fate. And what better way to do it than with competition time?
So we got a couple of winners. We got Adam Griffiths, who said that he would listen to us in the shower.
Good.
So he'll be getting that, and he's at Darth Dork. So do we want a picture of him in the shower listening?
You're the one that asked.
Only from the chest up.
Or if it's naked, do that fade thing where you can kind of cover up your privates. Yeah. You know, just like blur it a bit.
Can I just say Mark asked for that. Mark.
And also Johnny Edwards, which is at Johnny Hoppus, also said he would listen to us in the shower. And do you know what? If you do post us a picture of yourself in the shower listening to us and it's blurred out, you'll get a retweet.
You
also might get arrested as well if you don't blur it out.
Slide into our DMs.
Yes. And finally, we had, for anyone that left us an iTunes rating, that full set of Funkos that we started with and one of the waterproof JBL speakers. That's a hell of a bundle. All you had to do was leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And we've had a massive, massive influx of 5-star ratings in these last few weeks. Yeah. You think it would probably be people that are taking the time to recognise our incredible podcast, not just to enter a competition.
Yeah.
Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just weird that we offer a really good prize and suddenly we get loads. Listening.
Yeah. I think it's a little from column A, a little from column B.
And Rick Biz, which is B-I-Z-Z, has given us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and he says, you're the best podcast I've ever heard, and trust me, my phone of 20 gig is full of different podcasts.
Pretty good.
That's a bloody good rating.
Wow.
So again, you'll be getting the Funkos and the waterproof speaker, and we'll have a photo of you in the bath with your Funkos and your speaker. That's a good one.
Yeah, get funked up.
So now it's time to give away some more prizes. And on this episode, we've got 6 different opportunities to win some awesome, awesome gear. I don't mean like drugs.
Gear.
You can win some gear. So kicking things off, as we've just reviewed Deadpool, we've got from our good friends Funko a Deadpool Funko Pop where he's lying down in his famous pose.
Yeah.
Quite rare, not out over here yet. Funko have sorted this out with some American exclusives. The Cable official Funko and Domino set. So the question for that is, what character does Corey Feldman play in The Lost Boys? How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, fair,
I like it.
Fair question, yeah.
Also, they've released an exclusive Deadpool the Duck, which is a really rare Funko exclusive. It's a W exclusive, and you can't buy these. These are really bloody rare. I've seen them going for hundreds on eBay. Probably not hundreds, but quite a bit of money. We've got 2 of these to give away.
Uh-huh.
So this is really good. Sully's gone that extra mile because he knows it's Deadpool.
Yeah.
The question on this time round is going to be, in the 1990 film of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which turtle does Corey Feldman provide the voice for? How does that sound?
Again, good question.
Yeah. I like it.
It's fair.
Relevant.
You're going to have to do a bit of research.
Yeah.
I'm not making it easy. There's a film that's come out this week and we've got some new people on board, which is called Show Dogs. I think we saw the trailer for this. We said, should we review Deadpool or Show Dogs? It was a tough one.
Yeah.
And you've got a varsity hoodie, some aviator glasses, a dog bandana, which is really cool.
Pretty good.
A charm bracelet, a little beast pet Pritz, a soap bar for your dog, and a paw balm. So if you haven't got a dog, don't enter this competition.
So the dog bandana, is it a bandana with dogs on?
It's
or
not.
Is it a bandana for a dog?
Specifically for your dog.
Fucking hell. This country.
So, let's think. The third album by Corey Feldman is called Former Child Actor and features a cover from a John Lennon song, which arguably is better than the original and was exclusively available for the first 2,000 copies sold. What was the title of this cover? It's a damn good prize and it's worth looking for that title. And only, you know, you might be one of those 2,000 people that own that CD. So real simple question to win that. As always, our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere have come up good this week. Okay, so because it's Deadpool, they've come up with a Sister Margaret School for Wayward Girls t-shirt. Look at this design, guys.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome. What do you think to that?
Beautiful.
Pretty good.
On Corey Feldman's 2016 double album, Stop! Angelic to the Core, the first track from Disc 2, which is Angelic Rockadelic to Rock, features the guest vocals from the Limp Bizkit frontman. What is his name?
Ooh,
that's good.
It's a tough one.
That's a damn good one. What I like about Last Exit to Nowhere, they put a bit of thought into it. So when they're offering prizes, they don't just go, oh, here's a t-shirt. One of their favourite cult classics is Evil Dead. So yeah. Check out this Evil Dead t-shirt.
That's really good.
Let's keep it actually to do with the films now. So let's be sensible. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so let's think of a cult movie. Meatballs 4. Which is also known as Meatballs 4 to the Rescue, the 1992 masterpiece featuring Corey Feldman. Corey is the leading actor in this film, but what character does he play in Meatballs 4?
Ooh.
And don't be thinking it might be the same as 1, 2 or 3.
No.
And remember, this is Meatballs 4 to the Rescue. Okay? And finally, now this is a big prize. This is huge, and I'm not just overselling it. Honestly, Ben, Gemma, take a breath. Gemma needs to take a couple of breaths. Are you ready?
I think so.
Richard's sounds have been damn good to us. Let's be honest about it. The prizes are decent. They've been awesome. Yeah. I mean, we've had headphones, we've had decent wireless headphone kits, Bluetooth speakers, and now waterproof speakers. But now they've gone up one bigger.
How?
They've given us a Panasonic 4K Blu-ray player.
Fuck me.
I know. It's like, can I have it?
Yeah.
Just dropped his cider.
Yeah. This is really good. And, you know, go on richardsounds.com to see this sort of stuff because it's awesome. Like, this player is awesome. 4K is the future. Let's be honest about it.
It is.
We want high definition. Let's be sensible now, okay? We've had a lot of fun today, but we need to be sensible. Okay. So when Corey got married to his second wife, Susie, which famous MC officiated the wedding, okay? Now, this is not easy unless you're a Corey file like us.
It's not.
Ben, can you give us a clue on who that famous MC could be? Maybe a slogan.
Stop. Hammer time.
So that's a really nice bunch of questions this time. I like the variety in it.
Yep.
And it means you've got to do some research. We do get people tweeting us. All our competitions are open to anyone in the world, internationally, okay?
Yeah.
So you've heard that on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in Brazil, if you live in China, you can have one of these prizes if you enter and get the question right.
But not the meme.
No, not at all. But you get everything else. Also, all you have to do is email us. Look at this week. Three of our winners emailed us. But you can go on at STTE Podcast, which is our Twitter account. Tweet us your answers. And what we've decided this week, Ben brought a really good point up. Let's not do ratings of our rewatch or our new release because it spoils it.
Yeah.
I didn't realise we've done it for so long. But people are tweeting like, Avengers was 9. And I was thinking, oh, shit. Like, if you haven't listened to our episode yet, that's just completely pissed in your bag of crisps. And if I was to piss in a bag of crisps, I'd probably pick McCoy's.
Good choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
What crisp do you think absorbs the piss the best?
I would go with Monster Munch.
Oh. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Watsits.
Oh. Mm. Or Quavers.
Soak those bad boys.
Think about
up.
Quavers. They'd really suck it in.
They would. It'd be reduced to a little crisp.
So, if you want to piss in some crisps, that's Quavers.
And the final way is go on Facebook. And on there, you can DM us, or you can in-mail us, or you can do what you want. But the links are all available on skiptotheend.co.uk.
All right, I'm going to whack off again. That's right. That feels good.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite performance from an actor or an actress that we picked out the pot. On the last episode, we chose Scarlett Johansson, a very good actress indeed, and plenty to choose from. However, we're going to talk about our favourites. So, Ben, I want to throw this to you first. What's your fave?
I'm going with the female in Under the Skin.
Whoa, amazing choice.
For those who haven't seen it, it's a sci-fi film about an alien on Earth in human form who lures unsuspecting men to their deaths, but then seemingly begins to question her own existence. I agree when you say that Johansson's a very good actress. I absolutely concur, but she rarely pushes herself out of her comfort zone, I think. And more to the point, directors very rarely push her out of her comfort zone. So it's nice to see her in a film like this where the director, Jonathan Glazer, and herself have really pushed. It's unlike anything she's ever done before. And it suits the character because this character's an alien. She has a really otherworldly presence in this film. She's got this terrible black wig on. The fact that the film takes place in a dreary, rain-soaked Scotland as well, she seems more otherworldly, more alien, this glamorous Hollywood actress. She does seem like an alien, just somewhere from outside that world. And it's a really brave performance as well, figuratively and literally. She strips herself down. You know, she deconstructs the character of this Hollywood bombshell that she is. But she also performs her first nude scene in the film. And it's not remotely sexual because she's examining her human form with alien eyes.
It's not sexual.
Mark's looking at me like, it is.
28 minutes, 37 seconds in. That's brilliant.
It's a weird, really weird, haunting and disturbing film as well. It has lots to say about identity and gender politics, but I'm not going to get into that because we are not that podcast. But it's a great film, a great performance, and it's one that not a lot of people have seen. It was a small film, an indie, and it was a great film. It was on a lot of critics' like top 10 lists at the end of the year, but still a lot of people haven't seen it, and I think I wish more people would, and I wish she would do more like this.
I love this film so much. Is it Jonathan Glazer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Soundtrack's done by Mika Levy of a group called Mikachu and the Shapes, and it's so haunting, and it marries up beautifully with how the film progresses. Yeah, I'm on the fence of I love this film. Visually, sound, everything about it is just mesmerising.
I didn't see it until this year, and the only reason I bought it was HMV did a 5 for 30, and the Blu-ray case wasn't blue, it was all black,
yeah.
And that caught my eye. And I wish I'd kind of seen it on the big screen, but it's weird, they kind of make her, like you said, she's got this alien look, but she looks very pale.
Yeah.
She looks like someone that hasn't had a proper meal for a long time, and she's not like a skinny rake, is she? She's a very good-looking girl with a nice body, but in this film, she just looks so distant and so... It's like nothing she's ever done. She's not Hollywood in this film. Yeah. They brought her to the coldest, miserablest part of the world, Scotland.
Yeah. No offence.
I love Scottish people. You know this. My boyfriend's from Scotland.
Plus one.
Yeah, exactly. Plus one Higgins. But this film was great, and I'm so glad I bought it. I watched it a couple of times. It was just, if you actually tell people about what it's about, it sounds boring, dude. Like, it really does. But it's great.
Some of the visuals are exceptional. So the kind of void that she takes these men back to, that's just blackness, and how they filmed that so that there's nothing, no reflections or anything, just her in this black void. And then the bit at the very end, spoiler alert for everyone, when she pulls her human skin off and you see her original alien form.
Yeah.
So good.
It's really well done. It could be shit, that. That could have ruined everything. Yeah, that's the make or break part of the film.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's exquisite.
I'm not going to say anything else after that. Brilliant.
Mark, how about you?
For me, it's Charlotte in Lost in Translation.
Great choice.
This film, you know when we do like a masturbate session, sometimes you instantly pick your film.
Yeah.
For me, this was a no-brainer. All I did then is think, this gives me another chance to go home and watch Bill Murray on screen in Lost in Translation. Mm. And whenever we talk about Lost in Translation, it got Oscars. It's a great film. Bill Murray is amazing. But let's not forget, the reason he's so good is because he needs someone to bounce off. He needs someone to have chemistry with. All we ever say is how brilliant he was. Let's not talk about that, because we need to talk and recognise Scarlett Johansson's performance. It's one of the most moving and strange, in a weird way, uplifting performances that I've ever seen. She's this lonely girl in a country so far from her own home with a husband that has no interest in her. Mm-hmm. He's a photographer that basically gets up in the morning, goes out for the day and just leaves her to it like a bloody puppy or a dog at home. It's not fair and it's no life. And we see this, it's not even a romance, this friendship that she has with Bill Murray's character, it's not some love affair, it's not tacky, it's not a fling, it's not this kind of last ditch romance from him to rekindle his youth. They are basically getting by, having the best time they can, because he doesn't want to be there. He's doing some commercial for whiskey, his wife's at home with his kids. There's no romance left. Whenever he speaks to her on the phone, it's telling him that he hasn't done this, he hasn't done that. He's so miserable and she's just so isolated that when they come together, their chemistry is like nothing I've ever seen. Yeah. And it doesn't make you feel ill, like, God, he's old enough to be a dad. Yeah. You just want to be there with them, having a drink, having the best time. Are they in Hong Kong, are they?
They're in Japan.
Japan. And they're going around having the best, like, they're going to karaoke together. There's moments where she falls asleep on the bed, and I was noticing yesterday he's stroking her foot, but it's still not perverted. Mm. It's kind of like, he does kind of just take her under his wing.
Yeah.
And the way she acts is this such lonely individual that you just want to hug her. And I'm not even being grim and saying, like, oh, her ass is amazing at the start, which I have said previously.
Many times.
I could have just said I picked it because of her ass at the start, but I'm not.
Which would be true.
It's so, so true. But it's an amazing performance that I don't think people give enough credit to, because Bill Murray is the big guy.
Yes, absolutely. He steals focus. The word that comes to mind when I think of this film, and especially her, is melancholy.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
It's a performance of deep melancholia, if you like. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
It's a meeting of kindred spirits.
Yeah.
It's like soulmates meeting finally after years and years of just existing, because that's what she's been doing, existing. As soon as she meets Bill Murray's character, she has a new lease on life and she can actually be herself.
Yeah, it tugged at my heartstrings watching it again yesterday. And it's one of those things, again, which we talked about with Donnie Darko. They go up at the end, it's their final kind of goodbye, and you don't know what she whispers in his ear or he says to her. Mm-hmm. And that's fine for me. It could be, your ass looked good earlier, or it could be, goodbye, see you around. Whatever it is, but they feel like they've said enough. It reminds me a bit like The Office, when it's Pam and Michael Scott. But you don't need to know what they say. And if you try and describe this film to someone and say, well, there's these two people, they're very lonely, they're with someone they don't really want to be with, and they just walk around this country that they're not being used to, you'd be like, that sounds wank, it could flop.
Mm.
But Sofia Coppola?
Sofia Coppola.
Nailed it.
Coppola.
She nailed it, and you need to give her credit. But you know, she got the Oscar. So
I read something once that apparently this story was loosely based on her life when she was married to Spike Jonze.
Yeah,
he's kind of like the distant photographer character.
And the Anna Faris character was supposed to be Cameron Diaz, so it's reflecting when they worked on being John Malkovich.
Apparently so.
That's a nice little dig. Fuck you, innit?
Yeah.
There we go.
Wow. Come on then. So we're not on the same page.
No,
not this time. So I got a bit of a weird choice. I've gone for, he's just not that into you. No, I'm only joking. No. I've gone for Samantha in Her.
Yes.
Oh, great voice. Choice. Wow.
Exactly. And this is the power of what I believe, why I believe that Scarlett Johansson is a great character actress. It's a weird choice because I would have expected to chosen a performance where you physically see her, such as Under the Skin and such as Lost in Translation. But her vocal work in Her is perhaps one of my favourite pieces of vocal acting ever. She comes across as warm, friendly, non-judgmental, very trusting. You feel like you could tell your innermost secrets to her and she would go, that's great. Do you want me to see what we can do later on? You know, she's just so welcoming when you first hear her, and it helps that Johansson's voice has this distinct and beautifully husky tone to her when in dialogue. What makes this so magical is just by listening to how she interacts with Joaquin Phoenix's character, Theodore. They just have an undeniable chemistry together. But again, there's no physicality because they're just merely talking to each other. And it's purely down to how she interacts and how she responds with him, you know, by flirtatiously laughing or engaging in really deep and meaningful conversations. Even in the sex scene, and I use that with quote unquote, it's not a sex scene because we don't see anything enter. But the suggestion...
enter.
But the suggestion of when they are interacting, it really is believable.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly awkward because I get so embarrassed whenever I see a sex scene or a suggestion of a sex scene. But it is so believable. And the part where she really shines for me is during the confrontation towards the end of the movie. For those of you who have not seen her, I'm going to spoil a teeny-tiny bit. But when Theodore realises that as an OS, Samantha has many relationships with many other people and who have fallen in love with her, the heartbreak we see on his face is undeniable, but it's Johansson's justification as to why she has fallen in love with all of these people. She doesn't want to hurt him, but she's being true to herself as an OS because this system all of a sudden starts having feelings and emotions and awareness of the world and surroundings around them. It's extraordinary. She is extraordinary. Samantha is extraordinary. And Her is a modern day masterpiece.
It is a fantastic film and a fantastic performance. You understand why he falls in love with her, because she's got one of the most beautiful, sexy voices you've ever heard.
Even when she laughs.
Yeah, not like Siri, who sounds like an arsehole.
If you could download her voice as my Siri, oh my god.
And your sat-nav, imagine.
Oh,
yeah. All of that. But I believe I read once that the reason why the character's name is Samantha is because it was originally going to be Samantha Morton who was playing the character.
Ah.
And I think Spike Jonze just didn't dig on the actual voice performance, and that's why he brought Johansson in. I may be bullshitting there, but I think that's true.
When you're saying that kind of moment that he's having sex was believable, if you watch that scene with some really good noise-proof headphones from Richer Sounds and close your eyes, it's pretty good. to
inner psyche
to
here.
Touch little, yourself to. It's pretty good.
Little insight to Mark's lonely life there in his shed.
1 hour, 17, 26 seconds into the film. But yeah, it's about 2.5 minutes worth, and it's just the perfect time to relieve yourself.
You need an intervention, mate.
Intervention.
Oh my.
It's a great film. I fell in love with a dude watching it. Her voice is kind of like, it's, I don't know what the word would be, but it's just like, it's a bit husky-ish. It's a bit like, it's not manly.
Broken tones.
That sounds wrong, but it's like gravel. It's like, it's nice.
She sounds like a woman, not like a girl. A lot of Hollywood actresses have girlish voices.
Mm-hmm. Anne Hathaway.
Get rid.
So.
That's a sequel. Hey-ya!
That would be awesome.
What did social media come up? Because this is one that's so many to choose from.
On Twitter, D at Dan_Yell21 has agreed with you, Mark. She said Lost in Translation. And she said, not to sound like Jerry Maguire, but you had me at hello. The way she says hello to Bob says so much with one word.
I should have said that. That's brilliant.
Mike Donahue at Madman1891 has said Nola in Match Point. The movie isn't perfect, but Scarlett has never been more captivating and commanding on the screen than in this.
Do you know what? I saw Match Point come through shitloads, and I've never seen it.
Me
is
neither.
It a film about tennis?
I believe so.
Nah, I watch Wimbledon. Kirsten Dunst. That looks wank.
No. Utkarsh Paul at Karshman Paul has said Rough Night. It was so refreshing to see her let loose and have fun. That's all right, that. It's like a chick flick kind
it
of,
is,
you
isn't
know.
It?
I've not seen it.
It's all right. It's a bit of fun. Not a great movie, but it's a bit of fun. Declan McKinney at Declan McKinney has said definitely The Prestige.
Oh
my goodness.
And he says, you were never sure where her allegiances were going to lie, and she always kept you on your toes. Amazing film, he finishes with. And it is an amazing film, and she's very good in it.
When she turned like heel and then face again, it was like Big Show. It was. Yeah. It was amazing. She did it so well.
Not Big Red.
No, he's always a heel.
He's always.
On Instagram, Melissa, aka DreadfulPenny81, has said, as little as she was in it, I liked her in Ghost World. Because she had some of the best lines, and she's quoted one of those lines. Some people are okay, but mostly I just feel like poisoning everybody.
Very relatable.
I don't think I've ever seen Ghost World. I've read
the
comic.
Great
I've read
film.
The comic on which it's based, but I don't think I've seen the film.
Thora Birch, too. Brilliant. She's fantastic.
Jake Del Toro on Twitter, at Jake Del Toro, has said, I'd go with her, same as you, Gemma. You may not see her in the film, but you don't need to. She steals the film without making a physical appearance.
Couldn't agree more.
Nice.
Karen T at Magenta Willow has said she was brilliant as Black Widow in all the Avengers films, but then she was amazing in Lucy.
I didn't like Lucy.
I still haven't seen Lucy.
It's not great.
I'm very indifferent. I'm not really.
It's like from the director of Leon, Scarlett Johansson. You're like, wow, it's wank.
It's a bit weird, isn't
but it?
But
you know, it tells you what you need to know about a director when they're hyping it with his oldest film. One of his oldest film. They're not mentioning the other shit films he's done
from
in the last 10 years.
Director of Valerian.
Exactly.
Whoa.
Shite.
Roy Barrett at Roy1969THFC has said, the very much underrated We Bought a Zoo. They tried to make her seem like a girl next door, but they failed.
Cameron Crowe classic.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never watch
I'll
that.
Take your word for it.
It's good. She looks beautiful in it.
Always does. On Instagram, Tony, aka TD_81, has said, I actually really enjoyed her performance in Don John. It's criminally underseen and a very different role for her.
I like that film.
I've still not seen it. It's the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, isn't it?
Robin.
Lot of masturbating in that film.
Loads.
That's why Mark's seen it. And then finally, James Derbyshire at JDerbyshireBWFC has said, my favourite performance is Under the Skin. I think she's pretty underrated because people tend to think of her first for her looks and for her big box office smashes rather than her acting ability.
I just thought she hardly says a word in that film.
Oh, what, Under the Skin?
Yeah.
There's very little dialogue at all across the film.
Yeah. It's another one we should revisit at some point.
It's big time.
Can't wait for that.
It's time to masturbate again. It's my turn.
It is indeed. There are only four in the pot, dude.
This is nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Can I have a drum roll?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
So, on the next episode, we will be masturbating over Tom Cruise.
Too many guys think I'm a concept, or I complete them, or I'm going to make them alive. I'm just a fucked up girl who's looking for my own peace of mind. Everybody's gonna learn sometime. Everybody's gonna learn sometime.
Everybody's gonna learn sometime. It's now time for the rewatch. On the last episode, it was my choice, and I went for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, directed by Michel Gondry.
When his relationship disintegrates, Joel decides to erase his memory to forget about his ex-girlfriend Clementine, As the procedure takes place, he realises amongst this that he still loves her. Can he salvage the fading memories of the past to make another go of it in the future? The film stars Jim Carrey, Kate Winslet, Elijah Wood and Mark Ruffalo, to name but a few. So, this is a big old visual film, absolutely gorgeous in my opinion, but that doesn't matter right now. What matters is your two opinions.
Yes, and it should always be like that.
Yeah.
Bronze medal, baby. Bronze medal. So, Mark, I want to throw this over to you. What is your initial reaction to this little film?
It's incredible. The way that the director comes up with these original ideas again and again with such flawless scripts blows my mind. But I find it very difficult at times and very discomforting to watch because it reminds me of previous breakups. I'll be completely honest, yeah. This isn't okay. A counselling session, but there's been times where I felt like that's me, Joel, and there's women that probably want to forget about me. That's being serious, like real deep, yeah. But it's true.
That's what the Rehypnol's for. Yeah.
It kind of is a very challenging film to watch. I think you need to be in the right frame of mind because it's going to lower you. This isn't a, lads, come round, let's get some beers in, let's get some pizzas and we'll sit and watch this film. The performance from Jim Carrey blows my mind. It's the first time he's very serious. Even when he does other serious stuff in stuff like Man on the Moon, I still see comical sides of him. In this, there's nothing to laugh about. This film rips my heart out, Gemma, I'll be completely honest. It's been a long week this week. I've started a new job. I've got shit going on. It was a tough, tough watch. But it's a fucking masterpiece of a film because the way he crafts this again and again, hats off to him. Charlie Kaufman, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Yeah. A fucking genius. Move along.
Ben. Your thoughts.
I have the utmost respect for the technical qualities of this film. It's a flawless technical piece. And I adore the lead acting performances. But I just don't like the film for reasons that we'll discuss in depth as we go through. I just can't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a struggle for me to get through. I think I've seen it thrice now and it just doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. That's fair enough. So for me, a visually moving and astonishing story. It takes my breath away every time I see it and I go through a wave of emotions whenever I watch this because it is about heartbreak and it tries to truss it up as something worth fighting for. But ultimately, the mistakes are always going to be made with this couple. It's a loop. And it's a really sad and depressing loop. But it's colourful, it's mesmerising. By far my favourite Jim Carrey performance. Kate Winslet is wonderful as Clementine, as this sort of, I suppose, this bad luck talisman for Jim Carrey's character, Joel. Wow. It's going to be an interesting talk.
It's going to be a counselling session, I think. It's time to really be honest.
I feel like we might need like some form of like hug after this and just...
Well, we'll have a new game show shortly.
We will. So why don't we talk about the plus points? We've all mentioned about the visuals, the direction of this. Michel Gondry has this knack of really pushing the boundaries in a lot of his work. We've seen it in The Science of Sleep. He's even done a Flight of the Conchords number with Too Many Dicks.
Yeah.
That little number.
Too many dicks on the dance floor.
Too many dicks. It's great. YouTube it. It's amazing. But it's incredible how he does effects, the sound, the lighting, even the setup of scenes. I really want to talk about that first.
You'll be blown away by how many good music videos he's done as well. Because I remember when I worked in like Virgin as a, like, I think it was like work experience. They had these sets where you could just buy, and on the cover it had the White Stripes, it had Beastie Boys.
Fell in Love with a Girl, I think.
Yeah, and
I was like,
the one with the Lego?
I think so.
Ooh. Might be wrong. Could whatever, be wrong. Yeah.
That might be Smike Jones, actually. But it's one of
the
those
hardest
dudes.
Button to button.
Could be.
Whichever. Well, it's one of them. Yeah. But he did some great music videos. Probably nothing that I've just mentioned. But anyway, go back and look at this stuff because he's so creative and he just... I don't think his films have the same look again and again, which is a good thing because you do get these directors who are like, oh, that's obviously a Spielberg film, to be so original again and again and great. But it's the colours in this film as well. Even just the scenes where they're just lying down in ice and just kind of that. I think it's the cover of the DVD.
It is.
The colour of this, the scarf, the way the orange stands out and just the bleakness of use of colours. There's nothing happy or in your face like, yay! It's all just like... It feels like autumn on screen. It's really bleak browns and yellows, and it's hard.
And the thing that stands against it is Kate Winslet's character's hair. Because in different scenes, in Carrie's fantasy version of her, she has this bright red red hair, vivid red hair.
Yes.
Then I think at the start of their relationship, is it green? And then at the end of the relationship, it's blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you always know what you're looking at, where you are in that story.
That's
That kind of stands in stark contrast to the autumnal colours that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned about when they're lying on that frozen lake on the cover of the DVD or the poster. Did you ever notice there's a great big fracturous crack beside them?
No.
And it's an indication, for me, it's an indication of what their relationship is. They're constantly on top of this fragile setting where it could go at any minute. And I just loved how that kind of translated it.
Yeah, the technical merits of this film are off the scale. How many effects there are, transitions. So the one that always comes to mind is there's a bit where we're in Carey's head and he's going through this supermarket and then he goes through a doorway and all of a sudden he's in his friend's house.
Yes.
And that's not CGI. There's very little computer effects in this. It's all been done in camera, which takes a hell of a lot of work. The setups that must be involved to get these things, the lighting transitions, the scene transitions. It's a marvel, really.
There's one bit that always freaks me out whenever I watch it. So they're on that frozen lake in the memory. So rather at the beginning of the film, he's trying to save her from the memories being faded. They're just talking, looking up at the sky. Then all of a sudden, the scene goes black and we see Kate Winslet's character being dragged into this dark abyss. And it always completely freaks me out. I don't know why. It's just, you see the expression on her face because she knows that she's being deleted. She's no longer going to be existing. And even the sound of it, it's just like this haunting, kind of noise. It really does freak me out. I don't know why.
Watching it again as well, because it's been a couple of years since I've seen this film. It's not something, like I said, I want to keep revisiting because it's just bleak, it's dark, it's an emotional roller coaster of a film, and the journey you go on watching it for an hour and a half, you do feel at the end like, I don't want to love anyone ever again, I don't want anyone to love me, and if I have the power at times to erase stuff that's happened, you bloody would. It's like bloody Men in Black. If you had that power, you might use it, I think, sometimes. But the one thing I want to take away from it that's really kind of opened my eyes up the most is how good Kate Winslet is. And I do associate her too much in shite like Titanic.
Yep.
I do. Mm-hmm. And it's not her fault because she signed up to the biggest grossing film of all time or whatever it is. And she must have got a lot of bunts. But watching it again in this, it's a shame we don't see her do more quirky indie films because she's not going to now. She's too big and she doesn't do much anyway, does she now? She just, have we seen her in the last couple of years?
She doesn't do that many films. That's a good point.
No. She based her career on these quirky indie films. One of the best ones is Heavenly Creatures.
Not seen it.
Really great. Oh, that's a future rewatch if ever I've known
that
one.
Isn't Peter Jackson?
It is Peter Jackson.
Yeah, good film.
Yeah. But she's a great actress and I think it's a shame that we don't see her anymore. And if she does come back on, look what happened when we announced Rick Moranis last week. He's now back on screen.
Yeah, but she's not retired.
No.
She's not doing
but
any film.
We do have powers here and people listen.
Oh, yeah.
And we will see her cast in probably some indie
Avengers
film next
5.
Week. No, we don't want that big. But something
Daughter
good.
Of Thanos.
The remake of this.
This is undoubtedly, for me, her best performance in my eyes. Even though I don't like Clementine, I don't like the character. The character's an absolute mess. You have to separate that from the actor, and she is fantastic in this. The thing I love about Kate Winslet is she's always so real. She feels like a real human being, and I think it's because she's, you know, I don't want people to take this the wrong way. I think she's an absolutely beautiful woman, but she's not your typical glamorous Hollywood starlet.
Yeah.
She looks like a real human being who you would experience in real life, and that makes me immediately believe everything that comes out of her mouth. I never feel like she's acting. She is that character. Even in shite like Titanic, she is the bint who doesn't let DiCaprio on the, you know, on the door and lets him drown. I believe that she did that. That's why I hate her. But she's so real. She's always real and the kind of character that she is in this film, that kind of manic pixie dream girl type character, can be really, really grating. But it doesn't feel grating on her because it doesn't feel like an affectation. It feels like she is a real woman with real behaviour.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the draw between her and Joel, we see it at the first stage when they're going to, when they're on the train from Montauk. They don't work together. They're not a couple that should be together because he's so inclusive, he's so quiet, whereas she's just so in your face. Mm. They shouldn't work together, and ultimately they don't. And it's the chemistry which kind of keeps you on your toes whilst watching this film. But of course, they're both as fucked up as each other. They're not perfect. This story doesn't show them in a positive light, which I think is refreshing. It does smack of Charlie Kaufman, Anna Melissa.
That is not
a happy relationship. That is, after watching that film, I was very, very sad.
He's a bleak son of a bitch, isn't he, Charlie Kaufman? His writing.
He needs a Solero. But That makes everything better.
That's hilarious.
Did he do that film with Nicolas Cage? I forgot.
Adaptation.
Yes. Adaptation. That's not an easy watch either.
Great film, though.
Amazing. Mm. Nicolas Cage is phenomenal.
Yeah. Maybe he needs a hug. Hug and a high five.
The one thing about watching this again this week is you don't realise how much it needs your attention. You know, we can have rewatches that are fun and we can sit there. You've seen it again and again. If you are trying to get people into a film, and I've seen people on our social media say, oh, I loved hearing talking about Sunshine. I'm going to go and check it out. If you're now listening to us talking, we haven't spoilt that much because you're going to know it's an old film. It's not like a new release. Mm. You do need to pay 100% attention. If you go to the toilet and come back, you will miss the smallest bit of dialogue, which is so important to this film. It's quite scary that I think you need to watch this film a couple of times. It's one of those films that really needs commitment, and you don't get commitment from me for pretty much anything. This podcast is the only thing I've really committed to in life. But it's true, and you really need to sit there and give it your attention, because it's messed up, man.
It is.
And things happen, and there is like this big turn when you start to see what has actually happened, and that she's actually gone to erase him, and you start seeing and you piece it together and start seeing on screen, because like you said, they're on the train. You don't know at this point that she's gone to somewhere and said, I want him out of my life. I want him to forget. The moment that realization kicks in, it's a gut punch on another level. And being a guy who's been dumped, and Ben's never going to come emotionally on this episode and say, but there must have been some girl in your life that's kicked you in the fucking balls. And to see it on the screen, you relate and you think, oh, shit, man, I've been there. And Jim Carrey can put on a performance in this film where you said it's his favourite. Mm. He made me revisit a many, many pains in my stomach and balls from many, many women.
The thing I love about Jim Carrey in this film is it's not his usual mugging self. We know that Jim Carrey's
mugging,
whole shtick.
Mugging.
He mugs, he pulls faces, and he's, you know, loose-limbed, and he's all over the place.
Yeah.
So to see him play a recognisably human person was just a different colour for him. And it really worked. And it is a fucking shame that he wasn't nominated for bigger awards. Oh. He should have been Oscar-nominated.
Greatly. It's heartbreaking.
He didn't get anything.
No.
I think he was nominated for a Golden Globe, maybe, but he wasn't nominated for an Oscar.
It was nomination. It wasn't accolades.
Yeah.
He didn't get any plaudits for it.
The Truman Show is the closest you get to this, and this is even quite more possibly. Sensible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, quite possibly. There is one character that I do absolutely love because she is so underrated in this film, and it's Kirsten Dunst's character as Mary Svevo, or Svevo. Mary.
You're asking me?
Well, yeah, Mark will know.
I didn't. Yeah. Mark, help.
Svevo.
She is so wonderful in this film because she plays Mary as two parts. The first part, she plays as this infatuated girl with a great big crush on her boss. And she's just all giggly around him. She just wants to help him, be there when he's there. But then we get this crushing twist that she makes a move on him, he rejects her, and we find out they've already had an illicit affair already. And he makes her go through this procedure to forget about it. And the crushing realization of... it's almost completely her validation of how she feels about him is just thrown out of the window. He doesn't care about her. He just cares about himself. So she goes off to start exposing what this whole experiment, these whole procedures are all about by mailing every single cassette player to all of their customers. Kirsten Dunst, she's not someone that you often see on a lot of award nominations lists. I love the girl. I think she's absolutely wonderful. She's a really, really great actress.
Yeah.
And she must be on the screen for about, 20 minutes, 25
minutes?
Yeah,
it's not a huge part.
Not a huge part, but she is the absolute heart and soul. She is, my heart really goes out to her the most out of any character in the whole of the film. This is the one who steals my heart.
She is very good in it. And you're right, she is underrated. Have you ever seen the film Drop Dead Gorgeous?
Yes, and it's brilliant.
About the beauty
pageant.
Mockumentary.
Yeah, it is a fantastic film and she's great in it. It's funny seeing Mark Ruffalo in what is a tiny role, because we think of him now as this A-list, you know, the Incredible Hulk, but back then he was pretty much a nobody. I think he was a bit of an indie darling back then.
Oh, yeah.
So it's weird to see him and Elijah Wood in these little roles.
Yeah. And a slightly fuller head of hair.
Yeah.
Do you know that James Gunn has said that Mark Ruffalo is the best actor on the planet, according to him?
Really?
Like, ever. He said, like, the way he is on set, you don't really appreciate him because you just associate him as the Hulk now, who's mostly CGI and then switching. But he's fucking awesome. I want to see him do more serious roles.
Yeah,
he won't now, will he?
Go back and look at through some of his earlier stuff, man. He's done some really great stuff. And
Kids Are Alright?
Yeah, that's a great movie. Watch that.
Okay. Super. Another one for the list.
Yeah.
We're talking about Kirsten Dunst. Did you know that she was actually going out with Benny's favourite lead singer of all time? Do you know what? The singer of Razorlight.
Johnny Burrell.
She went out with Johnny Burrell. Fuck that.
But Benny's favourite band, Razorlight, of all time.
Yeah, I know Benny loves Razorlight. You don't need to tell me. I've seen the t-shirts.
to turn it around, she's just had a baby with Jesse Plemons.
Thank Christ.
There we go.
That's how you put it right.
Moved up in the world.
Yeah, not to Benny. Razor Light will always be number one.
Benny will be furious. She's dead to him.
Yeah.
So I really want to hear Ben's more of your thoughts about why this film doesn't work for you, because I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, okay. Just get him to open up.
So the truth of it is, it's not about the film, it's about me, I guess you would say, because I'm a cold-hearted son of a bitch. So
that's why we love you.
Yeah. So, Mark, you've gone into there, how this hits home for you, because it makes you think about the relationships you've had where women have kicked you in the dick and all that sort of stuff. For me, I struggle to get on board with the characters, not the actors. As I've said, I love the performances. I struggle to get on board with the characters because I can't respect the decisions they make. This whole idea of you've had a bad relationship, so instead of just, being an adult and working through it, you go to a special machine and have it wiped out of your brain. To me, that's a really pathetic, sad fantasy. It's really soppy. So immediately on the back foot, I just can't respect them because I think they're fucking idiots.
I'm so with you on that.
I can enjoy the work, I can enjoy the performances and the technical merits, but I just dislike them because I think they're weak.
No, you've got such a good point, because it doesn't allow that person to grow and move forward. It's a really good fucking point.
Yeah, so Mark, you've talked about women who've kicked you in the dick. You are a product of that. The man you are today is because you've been through those experiences and dealt with them.
And you're a bloody good bloke.
What man would you be if you'd had the Men in Black device wiping that shit out of your brain every time you'd had a bad run?
Yeah,
and where does it end? I had a bad day at work. Click, gone, didn't remember it. You are the sum total of the data that has been input into you. And that's important, that's what existence is. So I just find the whole concept of what they're doing lame.
It takes away the opportunity to reevaluate anything you've ever done.
And growth. Growth, human personal growth.
And you need memories.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're never going to learn.
Exactly. Everybody's got to learn sometime. Yeah. As Beck says in 20 minutes of the film. That's such a good fucking analogy, and I completely agree. I'm totally on board with that. We, as human beings, need to learn from our experiences so that way we can enjoy a more fruitful life and we can go the way we want to without repeating our mistakes. And this is why I always feel a bit iffy about the ending. This is the one bit that falls for the film for me. They accept that they erased each other from their memories and they go, okay, let's try again.
Yeah.
They are going to be in this awful, horrific loop where they're going to make the same mistakes. They're going to hate the exact things that they hated before the whole procedure happened. They're never going to be happy. And I find that really, really sad.
Yeah. It's kind of the Hollywood ending, isn't it? That they decide to give it another go.
But they're going to fuck each other up.
Yeah.
They have done for the whole film. So all they're going to do is just repeat. It's just deja vu.
Oh, but I love the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can love things and still understand its faults.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that. Loving things, you don't have to love it blindly.
No.
You can accept that there are issues that you wish were different or wish were fixed and still love the final product.
Have you been talking to my wife?
I have, but she didn't use the word love.
This is deep, but I like it. I like it. This is a good one to go with Deadpool, which was complete opposite.
It's really refreshing to hear this, and I'm glad that we've kind of taken away something from the film that actually it does get you talking and it does get you thinking, and it's not just a generic film that goes from A to B. This is a film that goes from A to B to Z to J to Y to 22 and then back to Z again. It's a crazy old ride.
One final thing I want to say, I don't know if you guys do this, but do you ever, when we get the rewatch, look at IMDb's kind of reviews? Even though you don't know this person, Jedi 76, Adam Smith 89, for some reason I love reading what people think. One of these ones I brought with me, and it just, I thought it was a joke. It says, "Watch this film, it's nothing like anything I've ever seen before. It's shit. It's not, it's not a perfect film, and for me, it's not original." This is what they said.
Bollocks.
Now, for me, and even if you don't like the film, I do believe it's one of the most unique films and one of the most unique experiences of cinema that I've ever had in my entire life. And I've seen a lot of films. To say it's not original, I will always respect people's opinion, but this is one of the most original films ever.
Absolutely.
Idiot. I'm not going to read him out because he'll probably be listening and kill me.
We've got your back, brother. Don't worry.
You won't say that when I'm in my house.
Not when there's a machete hanging around. No.
Forget it.
But like, take him if you want.
It's an original film.
Yeah.
It really bloody is.
It is.
Yeah. It's off my chest now.
Good. So, should we score this bad boy?
I think we should.
Lovely. Ben, I want to throw it to you first.
As I've said, I respect the technical merits, I respect the acting, and I've explained why it doesn't quite work for me, but I still think it deserves a healthy 7 out of 10.
I think that's fair. Mark, how about you?
A beautiful film that reminded me of why I'm an arsehole, so 8 out of 10. And I will learn from my kind of mistakes.
Because everybody's never got too
late. It's never too late.
I'm going to stick with you. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. Extraordinary film to watch. So overall, that gets a skip to the end. 8 out of 10.
Nice.
There we go.
It's Ben's turn, is it, for the next rewatch?
It is. Now, not that long ago, we had great success with a rewatch when we reviewed a David Cronenberg film starring Viggo Mortensen, A History of Violence. So what I want to do now is another David Cronenberg film, also starring Viggo Mortensen. It's Eastern Promises.
Thank yes! you!
It's time for our new quiz. Now, about a year ago, maybe a bit longer, we did a quiz that was based on casts. We'd give you a cast list and you had to then name what film it was, and it was called Cast and Furious.
It was a long time ago.
And a great name too.
Brilliant.
And our new quiz is also based on casts. I'm going to explain how it works in a moment. But a lot of people in listenerland might think, oh, it's a cast thing again. It's an inferior sequel to the last one. So because of that, the name of the new quiz is Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
I love it. Brilliant.
Arguably the best of the franchise.
Wow. So much thought.
And the way this one works is this. I'm going to give you the name of a film. And what you need to do is tell me a cast member from that film. Sounds pretty straightforward so far, yeah?
Yes. No.
Oh, yeah, because Mark doesn't know any names. Yeah. But this is how it works. The aim is to try and give me the name of someone as low down on the cast list as possible. I'm going to be working from the IMDb cast lists that list them in credits order, which generally means it's the most famous person at the top. So you're looking for the most obscure member of the cast that you can name, and whoever gets the lowest person on the list gets the point. There are going to be 10 films, so there are 10 points up for grabs. If we're at 5 all after 10, there will be a tiebreaker.
And is it only one guess each?
You get one guess each.
One name.
You literally get to pick one name.
Wow.
You get to pick one name, and then whoever's lowest on the list, whoever gets the most obscure cast member, gets the point.
I am extraordinarily sweaty right now. How about you?
It's been a long time since we had a whitewash, didn't we? Completely.
Yeah.
Yep. This is going to happen.
You reckon?
Gemma, you are going to nail me.
What?
Not in that way. No.
Just call me Carpenter.
Yeah.
I think you're gonna beat my ass.
Right. You've known me a while now.
I have. Yeah.
How do I refer to people? So let's aww, for example, he's Stifler.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
you know what
true.
I mean? And I'm not going to get points, am I, Ben, for
Tommy
the character name.
Tommy and Lisa.
You can't name the character. What I will do for you, though, Mark, is if you mispronounce the name, if I at least know who you're trying to say, you'll get the point.
That's good.
I'm not going to,
I appreciate
I'm
like,
not going to penalise you for your lack of ability to speak.
It's like remedial class.
Yeah, you get a gold star just for trying.
Well done. Get a thumbs up for effort.
So many memories on this episode of just growing up. Too much.
So then, guys, are we ready to have our first go? Who wants to go first?
Just get the embarrassment over.
Oh,
go for it.
You.
Give it me.
So you're going to pick the first one. So, Mark, your first film, your first film is Avengers Infinity War.
Okay.
Go on, Mark. Who are you going to pick?
Bloody hell.
One of the biggest blockbusters of all time. Literally 2 weeks old.
I know.
You should know at least one name.
Chris Evans.
Okay. Mark's gone for Chris Evans. Gemma, who are you going for?
I'm going for Carrie Coon.
Gemma's nailed it. Chris Evans is right near the top. Carrie Coon is way down. Point one goes to Pooch. Well done, Gemma.
Bloody hell. Don't get too cocky, kid.
Are we ready for film number two?
Let's do this.
Your film, and Gemma gets to pick first.
Okay.
Your film is Monsters, Inc.
Ooh. Okay. Gina Gershon. Oh, no. Oh, bollocks. I got the name wrong. Can I?
I think she has to go with what she said.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to let her give another
go.
Thank you.
Okay, right. Sorry. I got them mixed up. Jennifer Tilly.
Gemma's going with Jennifer Tilly. Mark, who are you going with?
Honestly, my mind is so, so blank.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know anyone. I can't
think. You can't think of a single name from Monsters, Inc.
Oh, this is hard.
That's what she said.
He's probably not even in it, but John Goodman.
John Goodman
is in it. That's all right.
But he's the number one name on the list. So Pooch gets another point with Jennifer Tilly. Well done, Pooch.
In a weird way, I feel like I'm winning just getting a name.
Well done. Well done.
You're winning because you're here. And to me, you'll always be a winner for that.
Oh, you sound like my mom.
Oh, it's because I am. Surprise!
This is good so far.
Film number three. Mark, you get to go first.
Come on, bud.
This one I think might be tough on you, actually. The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I don't know if he's in it, but he's in everything else he's ever been in. So let's go with... Oh, God.
It's not Stifler, is it?
Ralph Fiennes.
Okay, Mark's gone with Ralph Fiennes.
I know
Fiennes.
It's a big one, but I can't think of anyone else.
Fair enough. Gemma, who are you going with?
Tilda Swinton.
Gemma takes the point. Yet again, Mark, you've gone with the number one name on the list.
I don't know anyone else.
But at least you got one. Yes. It's 3-0 to Pooch. Oh, this is not looking good.
I did say, didn't I? 10-0.
You did.
It's all right.
My next game is going to be just questions on Kevin Smith films for all of us.
Specialist subject, Moose Jaws.
Next one. And Gemma, you get to go first on this one.
Okay.
It's Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Ooh. Okay. Diana Lane.
Jesus Christ.
Pooch has gone with Diane Lane. Mark, who are you going with?
This is tough, man. This is really tough. Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, mate. Jesse Eisenberg is literally one place higher than Diane Lane. So Pooch just sneaks it. Well done, Pooch.
Oh, mate,
I was rooting for you on that
one.
If I
could have given a point, I would have given it to you.
At least I didn't say Affleck.
Exactly.
Is it carried over the scores?
No.
Thank fuck for that. I can spend the next week reading IMDb.
Yeah, every film ever made. Memorise the cast.
I'm quitting my job. It's a reason to quit my job, right?
See?
Justified.
Just for a game show.
So the next one, it's Mark. You get to pick first on
this one, don't you?
You'll definitely get the point now. The film is Fight Club.
Jared Leto.
Mark's gone with Jared Leto. Gemma, who are you going with?
I'm going with Meatloaf.
This could be close.
Mark's got the point. He is considerably lower on the cast list than Meatloaf, weirdly enough. But
well,
yeah.
Think about it. He's only in like one scene getting his face smashed to pieces. Your favourite film moment.
He wasn't a big name back then, really. No. Yeah, so well done, Mark. You're in the game, pal. You're in the game.
I'm so pleased.
I've done
for
this
you.
On purpose to build up the tension. Meatloaf, what an actor.
I know.
Did you know that he will do anything for love?
Really?
But he won't do that.
I've heard that.
Did anyone ever find out what that is?
God. Well, answers on a postcard, please, guys. We're stumped.
Do you know what? Write in to us. This is for our dedicated listeners.
Yeah.
Write in what you think that is. And I swear, if it's a good one, we'll send you a Funko.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah.
That's nice.
They'll send us something. It'll be fine.
Will there be a Meatloaf Funko?
We'll send you a piece of Meatloaf from Aldi.
Yeah.
That's Aldi.
Aldi.
The next one. Gemma, you're going first on this one.
Okay.
It's Inglourious Basterds.
Ooh, okay. Diane Kruger.
Pooch has gone with Diane Kruger. Marky Mark, who are you going with?
It's not going to be, but I'm just thinking of IMDb. It might. It just might. Fassbender.
One above. Gemma gets the point.
Oh,
unlucky,
he's not
Mark.
Big, is he?
So damn close.
Well, I don't know.
We've all seen Shame. Gemma's got 5 points, Mark's got one, so it's not over, but you need to get all four of the remaining films right, Mark.
Piece of piss. That'll only draw as well, but that's good.
Yeah. We got a tiebreaker.
I'm glad you brought
it.
Okay, Mark, you're up for the next one. American Hustle.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Film's only 5 years old, had a massive ensemble cast with a lot of Oscar winners.
You bastard. What a dickhead I am. Amy Adams.
Okay, Mark's come with Amy Adams. Gemma.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to go for. Okay, I'm not confident in who's in it, but I'm going to give it a bloody good go, so I'm going to say Bradley Cooper.
Mark gets the point.
Yes!
Amy Adams is third on the list, Bradley Cooper is second. Well done, Mark. So the fight back is on. You only need to get the last three right.
Can we take a moment's silence for the belly in that film? Christian Bale.
And the comb over.
Yeah.
Oh, always the comb over.
He looks sexy.
Yeah, don't forget Bradley Cooper's perm.
Yeah.
He's got the real, like, those tight ringlets.
Can we pick that as a rewatch sometime?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Next one, Gemma. This is for you.
Okay.
Superbad.
Okay. Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Ooh, Fogel. Mark, who have you got?
I'm thinking actually on the list, I think lower down will be Seth Rogen. I do. I think he'll be lower.
You're absolutely
right.
Well, he's two places lower. Well done, Mark.
He's only the cop, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Well done.
You're killing it now, dude. Only two more. You only need the next two to draw.
Look, you're giving him hope. That's so cute.
That's a good film.
It's a great film.
Oh, yeah, again, future rewatch.
Yeah.
So good.
Emma Stone.
She's so...
The bit he period on my leg.
No, when he's behind her and he's doing all those like wanking gestures and like drinking the jug of jizz. She's so funny.
Marky Mark, next one's for you. Star Wars, The Phantom Menace.
Jesus Christ.
No, he wasn't in it.
this sucks, man, because I know that, I can't think of bloody Anakin's real name, so I'm just going to have to take a wild guess and go with, let's go with Natalie Portman, okay? Because she's not a huge character at this point. She builds.
Okay, fair enough. Natalie Portman. Gemma, who are you going for?
I'm going to go for a big risk. Keira Knightley.
Oh, this is so tense.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah!
And she's way, way down the list as well.
Great work.
Gemma takes the victory.
Thank you.
But we'll carry on playing.
We'll carry on. There's a bit of glory left to be had.
Yeah.
And the final one, and this goes to you first, Gemma.
Okay.
The Big Lebowski.
Flea.
Bloody hell, she's picked a big one there. Flea. Beat that, Mark.
Do you know what? I'm going to go for it, and it probably won't. Tara Reid.
Oh!
She's three above Flea. Oh, I'm sorry, mate. Gemma guessed the point, but it was a good shout. Yeah.
That
was a good shout.
Great guess.
Oh, so the final score then is Gemma has won 7-3. But it was it was a good effort,
I feel like I did better than that.
It wasn't a good effort. It was valiant.
It was a valiant effort. We do have the tiebreaker. Would you like to have a go at the tiebreaker anyway?
For just funsies. For
why
funsies.
Would I?
Mark, I think you might. So let's see.
Is it Mac and me?
The tiebreaker is, and I'm going to let Mark go first, The Goonies.
Oh! Corey Feldman.
Mark's gone with Corey. Gemma?
Martha Plimpton.
Fucking hell. Gemma takes the point.
No.
Although, she's only actually two places lower than Corey, was close.
Corey is Corey. That wins.
That's
Come
true.
On,
if you Trump's get everything. Say, yeah. Mark has actually technically won the game because you get 10 points for saying Corey.
10 Corey points.
Yes. What a load of fun.
That was great.
Mark, because you lost, I think you should have a week off. I think you should be quizmaster next time.
I'm working
around.
As well now, so I've got a lot more on. You know what I mean?
I love how we keep saying this. As I know, if me and you don't work, Gemma.
I've got a job, you know, guys.
You know what I mean? He's been sat on his arse eating pizza for two months. And we've been working.
Pizza Hut pizza. Not just pizza.
Sorry.
You know what I mean? It's not bloody Domino's. It's Pizza Hut only.
Correct.
Okay, so we'll come back in 2 weeks' time and Gemma is going to be the games master.
No, you are.
You are.
Oh, what? I got to do work.
I literally just said you get a week off from the game.
I don't. That's not a week off. I'm to prep it.
Go on, coming up with the name of the 11 films. Oh, no.
Jesus.
Time for Skip to the Recommend. It's that point of the week where we give you our pop culture recommendations. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. It's that simple, isn't it?
I really will at some point when I can be asked do a little jingle that goes perfectly in time with Viv's do you. And it will. I'll do it. It'll be nice.
I look forward
Episode
to
100.
It.
Stick around for that.
Let's do it that yeah. If that doesn't get him, I don't know what will.
No.
Pooch, I'm going to throw it to you first. What is your recommendation this week?
I'm going for a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been on Channel 4 and it's called True Horror.
Oh, not familiar.
No, I thought you were going to say The Crystal Maze.
That doesn't even need a recommend.
No,
that's far too good for its own good. But at the time of recording, it broadcasts on Channel 4 Thursdays at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that it may have finished, so it is available on all four, the on-demand service.
Nice.
Hopefully our overseas listeners can view it at some point. But it's an anthology of real-life stories of everyday folk who experience supernatural and terrifying experiences.
Ooh.
Now, I know, right? Let's set the mood. Let's get some dry ice on the go. So it's from the same people who made The Enfield Haunting a few years ago, starring Timothy Spall.
Nice.
Now that was fucking terrifying.
Yeah,
and
I shit myself.
Very, very good. Yeah, I know. I went through at least three pairs of pants on the first hour. So if you haven't seen that, please do. It's acted brilliantly and it's genuinely scary to watch. And I've kind of been disappointed of horror films as of late, apart from, with the exception of The Conjuring and Ghost Stories. They were genuinely scary and very well acted. So I've been wanting something that really does give me the chills or scares me stupid, you know, scares the absolute crap out of myself. And this is it. Do not, under any circumstances, watch this alone or in the dark or preferably in the middle of the woods with no other life around you. Because I like to think of myself as a bit tough, like a bit of old gristle. But bugger me. It got me jumping out of my skin. It got me ingrained into my brain. So before I went to sleep, I started thinking about certain scenes and going, I didn't fancy sleeping anyway. It's fine. But the episodes are dramatic reconstructions of what's happened. So if you've seen Touching the Void, you get that talking head where it looks directly into the camera and tells you their story, and then you get some actors act out what happened. It's kind of that same premise. The first episode is all about supernatural goings-on on a farm. The second one, and stick with me on this one, it's about a man that lives into the walls. He lives in walls,
okay,
and haunts a family. But the third one is by far my favourite one. It's called Terror in the Woods. Now, I'm going to throw it out. Do you have an idea what that might be about?
Blair Witch style,
yeah, something like that.
Well, two lads go into the woods and have a bit of a lark. They film themselves doing like bottom tribute kind of comedy pieces. Oh. And they decide to camp out in the woods. I don't really need to go into too much detail as to what happens after that, but bloody hell, it is terrifying as balls. It is really, really good. The effects are actually quite impressive. They leave on some pretty good scare jumps, but not to the point where they're really trying to milk it like a Maydive cow. But it is a champion show from Channel 4. If you love horror and you really like scary stuff, give this a go. If you don't fancy sleeping, also watch this too. So please do. Give it a go.
There you go.
Ben will never watch that.
I know. Ever. I'm sorry. But Mark... This is right up your alley. You'll really enjoy this.
I think I might buy a brand new Sony TV to watch that. Because they come with the old, the smart television stuff built in. So
they
I could watch Netflix, I could watch Amazon Prime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I could definitely watch what's it called? 4OD?
It's like all four.
All four. Yeah.
Sony television's very good for that. Samsung, pretty good. LG also.
I bought the Sony as well, I could use the 4K Blu-ray player that we've got on our competition.
Oh, there you go. Synergy.
Before we send it out to
that's
the winner.
Sony. Samsung, LG, 4K Blu-ray.
Panasonic.
Mm. But good. Not Bush.
Not Bush. Never Bush.
Never Bush in life.
Never.
Marky Mark, what's your pick?
Mine's a YouTube series.
Oh, yes.
Oh, YouTube.
And it's fucking awesome.
I know what it's going to be.
Cobra Kai.
Of course.
My God, this shouldn't have worked. You've seen the trailer, right?
Yeah.
The trailer was wank. I don't care what anyone says. Awful. This is 9.2 on IMDb right now.
Wow.
If you grew up in the 80s, Daniel LaRusso probably will be a household name. He is the Karate Kid. Back in the 80s, this film was great. They made stupid, stupid sequels, and they did a remake, which wasn't even karate, with Will Smith's kid. and it was terrible. I didn't even watch it, but I've heard it's terrible.
Yeah.
This should not have worked. It's so, so long since we've seen it, but for some reason, the first two are available on YouTube for free, which is great. Then you have to go and spend £1.89 on the rest, but it's worth it. It's 16 quid.
Daylight robbery.
For 5 hours, which you'd spend on a Blu-ray or DVD, wouldn't you, if you went to HMV.
HMV.
Or Zavi.
It's a great story, right? It's not silly. It's not going with the whole nostalgia feel of trying to make these old men still kind of fight. You're rooting for Johnny this time around. They've switched it. He's this broken man stuck in the 80s, a bit like Uncle Rico. But you get these flashbacks to give you the whole, you know, Cobra Kai and everything else. But it's really, really well acted. It's really well produced, and they've given it the love and attention it deserves. I watched them all in a day before I got a job. They're half an hour each. But it's a villain turn hero, because now Daniel LaRusso is this kind of car salesman, this kind of real estate guy who's really rich and wealthy and doesn't have any interest in anyone. And because we've got Johnny, who's obviously played by Billy Zabka, fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. He should be doing... I think, honestly, this could kind of give him a career again. I do genuinely believe that he'll get cast in something good, because he's bloody good.
Yeah.
Because of Johnny Lawrence's character being such the bad guy, now it's switched and you're actually rooting for him, which is something I never thought I'd see.
So this is where I'm confused, because I always thought he was the good guy. That's how I read it.
Because
that
of the whole crane kick and everything else. But he was always working with the bad sensei, wasn't he? And, you know, break the leg, sweep the leg, and all this.
That's why he was the hero, wasn't he? that's how I saw it. I don't know about you guys.
But misunderstood.
But it's the story, and it really bloody works. And I don't know why, I don't know how, but it's been renewed for series two.
Yeah.
The end is, I'm not going to ruin it because I want people, they bring back one of the best iconic characters of all time.
The obviously ghost of not, Mr. Miyagi.
No, that would have been amazing. His hands on himself. But it's great. The acting is really good. It shouldn't be. Let's be honest about it. Ralph Macchio, he should not be. He's probably not acted in years. He's been to Comic Cons and done stuff.
He is. He's in that the series The Deuce on HBO with James Franco.
Former skip to the recommend.
Yeah. His hair freaks me out. He's older now than Mr. Miyagi was in the original Karate Kid, which is crazy.
Up.
But his hair sticks in place. They need to do something. It's weird. He's obviously had work done. Honestly,
allegedly,
you know when we take stuff and we're like, Ben, check it out. I know he won't. Watch the first two, because it's just an hour,
and
they're free on YouTube.
Nice.
He won't probably pay £18 for the rest. but it's worth it. It's really good. And 9.2 on IMDb.
Yeah.
And you must have read reviews from stuff like AV Club and stuff.
Yeah, people say it's great. Mm.
You said Johnny, and I just had an image of Tommy Wiseau kind of all kitted up, ready to sweep the leg.
Season two, that's how you do
it. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I said there was this big character at the end.
Oh, hi.
But they have the right amount of flashbacks. It's not... There's just enough of the flashbacks. They're not like, you know, doing the whole, you're the best around. None of that. But there's still 80s film music. Yeah. And you're rooting. It's a great, great series. And I've seen so many people on social media raving about it. And it's good. It's really fucking good.
That's good to hear, because it could have easily been a shit show.
Oh, the trailer made it. The only one downside about it is Daniel LaRusso's in this family now, and he's got two kids, a daughter that's kind of getting into karate.
Yeah.
Great. He's got this son that looks like a young kind of Hurley from Lost. And it's the most annoying character I've ever seen. And if you're listening now, please let me know if I'm being out of order, but he's the most annoying little shit, and you've got to sit through him, and hopefully he'll get killed off in season two or something, because he's so fucking annoying. Just this kid that's just... He's worse than the kid from Babadook.
Oh, I was Christ. About to say, that surely not.
Worse. There's no mummy, but he's
He had to do his impression, didn't he?
But we got
he
it out
to,
of
he had
him.
To throw that in.
But, couldn't resist.
But honestly, Cobra Kai, bring on season two. Watch the first two episodes. If you don't like it, you've not spent any money.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
I will definitely watch it.
Rewatch. Please just watch 1 hour, just the first two. When you're really... You watch fucking Yoga Hosers, dude.
That's true, I did, didn't I? Christ, what was I thinking?
I don't even know anymore.
What have you got, dude?
I'll give it a go. My pick this time is a website, or more to the point, it's a specific section of a website. It's called With Spandex, which is the pro wrestling section of uprocks.com. And the editor and lead writer of With Spandex is a chap called Brandon Stroud, who is my favourite wrestling writer. If you enjoy wrestling, if you enjoy reading about wrestling, he's the guy to go to, because a lot of wrestling writers are insiders. They're kind of part of the old guard. They, you know, they have all these connections and that. Brandon Stroud isn't. He's just a fan. He's someone like us who watches the show and loves it and hates it for the same reasons that we do, and that's why I love reading his columns. He does this thing every week with Raw and SmackDown and every pay-per-view called The Best and Worst, which is exactly what it sounds like. He'll list the best things about the show, the worst things about the show. And he's insightful and he's clever, and I get where he's coming from, but he's funny as well. I have never not read one of his columns and not laughed out loud, which can be problematic when I'm reading them on the sly at work.
So sly, you've just told thousands of people.
Eek.
Exactly. You hope that no one you work with would listen.
No, fuck them. He's a guy who clearly loves the product, but also isn't afraid to admit when it's shite, which it often is.
Yeah.
Mark, you and I, we watch WWE all the time. We're complete diehards. But we will readily admit that it's crap a lot of the time.
Yeah.
The Backlash pay-per-view, how garbage was that? Backgash, indeed.
Yeah, awful.
Catlash. It was terrible.
The greatest Royal Rumble, the worst.
The greatest house show, it was shite. But he's the same. He talks, he talks the way we talk, but better and more informed.
Does he like James Ellsworth?
Only for comedy value,
But that's not going to get me to watch it.
I don't think he loves Big Red as much as we do, sadly, But he's a great writer. They also have news and interviews and features. They also have a podcast called McMansplaining, which is genius. And they have great guests. In recent months, they've had Kenny Omega, Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe,
fucking
Mick
hell.
Foley. Yeah, the podcast is great. And the reason why I've decided to bring this time around is not just to big up their work, but it's because I want to stand on my soapbox for a minute here. Journalism is dying, especially written journalism, print journalism, newspapers, magazines. They died a long time ago. Now, websites are going the same way because people want video content. They don't want to read anything because we live in this dipshit age where kids speak in text speak and, you know, they can't read anything because they're all fucking morons. It's all video content now. So because of that, Uproxx, like a lot of websites, have just laid off a load of staff. And With Spandex have laid off half of their writers. They laid off a guy called Bill Hanstock, who used to do a lot of their features, wrote some great stuff. A woman called Emily Pratt, who used to write reviews of New Japan Pro Wrestling, which were fantastic. And they've just been fired, basically, because they want to save money and invest it in video content, which I don't give two shits about. If you don't read these websites, if you don't follow them, if you don't retweet them, if you don't tell people about them, they die. This good stuff will just go away if you don't support it. So I want people to go to uproxx.com/prowrestling and start reading the work of Brandon Stroud and the remaining writers on With Spandex. And if you read it and if you like it, tell your friends, retweet it, get it out there so they can keep doing their good work.
That's amazing.
Cool.
And do the same for Mark and me. Because it's dying. No one wants to listen to podcasts anymore.
Oh, don't be silly. You got some great content there.
And reimagined.
And reimagined.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. I've never heard of it. I'm guilty, right? When I can't be asked to watch Raw, because they had a period about 6 months ago when it was shit.
Yeah.
Both of the products, Raw and SmackDown, was really shit. Before Daniel Bryan's return and the shake-up, it was awful. And all I used to do is go on Bleacher Report, and you kind of told me if I should watch it that night.
Uh-huh.
Bleacher Report isn't as trusted anymore. They just kind of want adverts on there. Yes, it's not great. Exactly. So this is something I'm going to actually kind of invest my time in.
And you've actually been in the same room with Brandon Stroud and probably didn't know it. So when you went to the last SummerSlam, and you and your dad were at the top of the Freedom Tower or One World Trade Center, whatever it's called now, and you were interviewing people like Nikki Bella and stuff like that, he was there as well.
Oh, shit.
So there are videos of him on Up Rocks where he's interviewing them, and he was clearly in the same room at approximately the same time as you, talking to the
same
people.
We'll go through my photos in a minute and we'll see if we can see him in the background.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
So yeah, have a read.
And on that note, I just want to apologise to John Cena for my dad taking Nikki off him. That was, you know what I mean? It may have taken 6 months, but you know, it's not coincidence.
He's a charming motherfucker, your dad. I see it. I get it.
We've all been there. Oh, that's weird.
What?
That's really fucking weird. So, yeah. any recommendations come from anyone but my dad?
Oh, loads.
Brilliant.
So on Twitter, Andrew White at Great Bruce Shark has said, not new, but just a new series of Friday Night Dinner on Channel 4. Still one of the most underrated sitcoms to grace our TV screens. If you're a Friday Night Virgin, it's a gem of a show.
I love this so much. Morning, Bambinos!
Is that with Will from The Inbetweeners?
Yeah.
Who is just Will
Simon
from
Bird.
The Inbetweeners?
Simon Bird.
The dad is amazing. Any females?
Yeah.
I love him. I didn't even know there was a new series until I read this tweet.
So
I'm getting, I think there's been two or three episodes now.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
That's my weekend plan.
I love it whenever he walks around with his shirt off. Yeah. I'm boiling.
Lovely bit of squirrel.
I've not even watched it.
Have you never seen Friday Night Dinner? It's so good.
A few of the seasons are already on Netflix.
Yeah.
Wow. So please check it out.
Get involved. On Facebook, Simon Williams has said, recently discovered the band Radio Moscow. Their album Brain Cycles is epic, with 250 miles being the standout track. When the song kicks into gear, it'll have you up and air guitaring around like a madman.
Nice.
I've never heard of Radio Moscow, either of you?
No.
I'm all for air guitar though, so
it's worth it.
I will get on Spotify to listen to that on a Bose speaker.
Or Amazon Unlimited.
That would be good.
That's also a service. Or iTunes.
Yes.
Or if you're a dickhead, Tidal. Morphic Fields on Twitter, at Morphic Fields, has said, a podcast by the inimitable Stephen Fry called Great Leap Years. Only 5 episodes so far, but it's a wonderful listen if you're interested in historical anecdotal connections delivered in his hugely informative style.
Cool.
I've never heard of it, but I love Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
I love that listener as well. He lives in China. He listens to us in China.
Hey,
that's
Morphic
pretty good,
Fields.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Keep spreading the word for us.
Mm.
Yeah, do it. On email, we actually got an email response to this one. Matthew Kartner has said, the Star Wars Secrets of the Empire virtual reality experience at Westfield Stratford, London. You get to free roam in the Star Wars universe as a rebel spy. You get to shoot stormtroopers and get shot at and actually feel yourself get shot. It tests all of your senses and it's the best thing I've done lately, hands down. Worth every penny.
Bloody hell.
That's cool.
Yeah, should we have a skip trip?
Yeah
big time.
But we're going to do some sort of it's 4D as well at some point.
Oh, we're going to do a 4D cinema trip. Stay tuned for that one.
At Cineworld.
On Twitter, Sam at Killing Joke Told has said, the death of WCW by R.D. Reynolds and Brian Alvarez. Now, I don't want to make this entirely a wrestling podcast, but that is a fantastic book. I think you've read it as well, haven't you, Mark?
I've got it.
Yeah.
I've ordered the new edition.
Right.
And I've not started it yet. It's in my pile, but it's one that I can't fucking wait because I know everyone I know, you know, Stu, our good friend,
yes,
one of the best wrestling people out there. Fucking hell, he raves about it. So I'm like, yeah, and you love it.
It's a genius book. I've literally read it 3 times now because it tells you of all the stupid mistakes that WCW made to take them from the number one promotion in the land to being bought out by Vince McMahon and WWE. It's crazy.
There was an introduction I saw on YouTube the other day, and this guy, I don't know, I'm not really au fait with WCW wrestlers. I do remember Sid Vicious being there.
Yes.
And this guy crashed through a wall, but as soon as he crashed through it, he fell over and his helmet fell off.
Shockmaster.
Shockmaster.
It's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
And then you can quietly hear the British Bulldog in the background going, he's fell on his fucking ass.
That's one of the best moments in fucking wrestling history.
Until Titus O'Neil at the Royal Rumble tripped and fell under the ring. Genius.
Still great.
They're annoyingly pushing it too much now. You can get the t-shirt and they've reenacted him stepping over. I'm just leave it.
Vince McMahon has never met something that he couldn't milk money out of, has he? So of course they're
good
doing
point.
T-shirts. Moving on to Facebook, Lee Morgan agrees with you, Mark. He said, it's been all about Cobra Kai on YouTube for me. A dream come true for fans of the original Karate Kid movie. Somehow they've managed to recapture the unique feel and spirit of one of my favourite ever movies, and I really can't recommend it highly enough.
Sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg.
So good.
On Twitter, this one I think might be for you, Gemma.
Okay.
Amy Aldridge, at Amy Aldridge. For any horror fan, the Demon Artist series by Darren Shan is a must read.
Ooh.
I loved these series of books as a teenager and still pick them up now at nearly 30.
I'm a big fan of horror books. Mm. The way how they describe certain imagery is just so vivid, so I'll be on that.
Yeah, get involved with some Darren Shan.
Hello.
On Facebook, Craig M has said, Jonathan Hickman's Avengers Omnibus, a sci-fi superhero epic involving a large cast of characters. You can tell there was some influence on the recent Infinity Wars from this. It's got some epic cosmic superheroics and some large-scale long-form sci-fi storytelling with some fantastic artists co-creating with Hickman. I definitely want to read that, especially because Jonathan Hickman is the creator and writer of East of West. That was my pick last week.
Ah, so, synergy. Yeah,
synergy, so I am all over that. Again on Twitter, Jamie Wilson at Jamza32 has said, currently reading and almost finished a book called Killing Pablo by author Mark Bowden. Fantastic and riveting. Have either of you ever read this book?
No.
I have, it's fantastic. It's a book about Pablo Escobar.
Oh,
and about
nice.
How the government, both the American government and the Colombian government, hunting him down, his eventual downfall. If you're a fan of the show Narcos.
Amazing series. Great.
Absolutely. Read this book.
Yep.
Sweet.
It's an excellent companion to it. And then finally, James Gain, at James Gain, said, went to see Frank Turner for his new album tour. In my opinion, one of the best live acts out there. Always puts on an amazing shift and is well worth seeing if you get the chance.
Amazing guy. I absolutely love his old band, Million Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing songwriter. Went off and did his own thing and became kind of like the next Billy Bragg. He's fucking incredible. One of the best songwriters out there. One of the best lyricists. And he doesn't give a shit. He does what he wants. He'll go and do a folky album, a bit more poppy. This is probably the most radio-friendly the album he's done, but it's fucking so well put together, and the man is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Fantastic. Well, we really enjoyed those recommendations this week, and please send us more. You can get us on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast or on Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or you can email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Been a really good one. I know you shouldn't, you know, pat your own backs, but I feel like it has been.
I want to tap both your back. Tap, pat, pat. Pat, pat our backs.
Yes. I was going to say, as long as you're not tapping our asses.
No, because I, Kevin Spacey style, but no.
Oh.
We can't go there. Can't we? Is it been too long?
I think it's too
soon.
Always. Okay. Always too soon.
But yeah, I've had a blast.
Yes,
been great.
Yes, indeed. And what's coming up on the next one, which will be an equal blast, I'm sure.
Well, I'm glad you asked. Our main review for the next episode is going to be Solo.
Ooh.
A Star Wars story about Han flipping Solo.
Was that an ugh noise that came out of your mouth then, Mark?
It's just a, ugh, God, I can't believe it's here already.
Yeah, like too many Star Wars films.
Yeah, but it's a good thing because I believe with our expectations, a little spoiler, I don't think we're that excited right now.
True.
So we can only be pleasantly surprised.
We'll find out in the next episode.
Absolutely.
Tune in.
Right. What's our topic, Mark?
It's going to be our top three straight-to-DVD films. Now, I want to kind of clarify something. I believe we're now in a generation where people are going straight to Netflix like Annihilation. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about straight to sci-fi channel like Sharknado. It's those films like Mean Girls 2 and stuff like that that have gone straight to DVD. So hopefully if you're an 80s or 90s kid, you'll have a fucking hundreds to choose from.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about those films that never made it to the big screen.
Indeed. And if in doubt, just look on IMDb for Nicolas Cage or Bruce Willis.
Absolutely.
And you'll see plenty.
We're literally going to be doing Cage Cast before you know it.
Yeah. And our rewatch next time round is Eastern Promises. I've been holding on to this one for a long while. I've wanted to throw it out there. If anyone out there in listener land has not seen it, please watch it before you come to us, because it's one of those films I evangelise about because I think it's that damn good.
I'll say it now, I've never seen it.
I know. You're in for such a good time, dude.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be great.
Well, speaking of a good time, our movie masturbate on the next episode is Tom Cruise.
Wow.
That little fellow who runs around everywhere.
The Mentalist.
We get to choose our favourite running point.
Yeah. What's the best bit where he runs and the best bit where he falls out of a plane and or helicopter?
We're going to have 50 to choose from. Stay tuned.
And you say little fella, he is 4'3".
Oh, he's
three,
tiny.
He?
He's like Tom Thumb.
He's absolutely crackers, isn't he?
He's
Crackers, man.
Crackers.
Yeah.
Quackers.
Did you say quackers or crackers?
Crackers.
You can say
crackers.
Both if you want, referring, you know, like if you're going to talk about cheese or ducks.
What crackers? Is it McVitie's?
Ritz.
Always.
Ritz. They're not crackers, they're biscuit.
They are totally crackers.
Different, nah.
I'm disgusted.
They're both crackers. Mark, quiz.
The quiz, I forgot the name of. It's, hang on, Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Correct.
And it's round two, and I'll be the games master, and I can't fucking wait.
And of course, we'll have all the usual goodies that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. See you in 2 weeks.
So from our family to yours, keep your pants dry, your dreams wet, and remember, Hugs, not drugs. Come find me now. We're a